Patrick's Day to all of you on this Cinco de Mayo. It's kind of like St. Patrick's Day, isn't it? Where people, you know, on St. Patrick's Day, people who aren't Irish act like they're Irish and get drunk.
Right.
On Cinco de Mayo, people who aren't of the Hispanic descent pretend they like fajitas more than they do.
Is that true? I didn't know that that was going to happen. Whatever happens, happens. It was an interesting choice of music, Kevin.
I just thought everybody's doing mariachi music and all that today. Why not try to stand out
different?
A little bit?
All right.
Well, we're not going to go that different, but we're going to go more authentico, if you will.
Yeah.
Because we are going to have an actual mariachi band in the studio, and they're youngins.
Yeah. This is Kevin, you remind me now. Everybody's 14 years or younger?
I think it ranges from like 10 to 17.
Oh, 10 to 17. Okay.
Isn't that just so cool?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I love the mariachi bands. They sound really great, and they make great use of accordions, too, sometimes.
So true. So true.
It's not just Vlasta.
No. Also, the good people over at Tamale's Restaurant, which is one of our city's finest. Well, it's out in the suburbs, in the northern suburbs, but boy, is that good food. We've had them on before, and they'll be by to explain what is and is not the proper things to eat on this Cinco de Mayo.
I love that. And I love that restaurant, and it's nowhere near me. So thanks for bringing them.
Oh, you're gonna love it. You have loved it in the past. I'm sure you will in the future too.
All right. Speaking of drinking and St. Patrick's Day and carte blanche to just have lots of margaritas, will Jeff be bringing margaritas? I'm hoping.
I think that is the plan. Yeah.
All right. An interesting thing. I wanted to ask you, and I did when I came in today. Did your parents ever let you sip their beer or their drink at like a family party, a picnic, a wedding? Did they ever say, hey, you want to try some?
No, neither of my parents drank. On very rare occasion would they have any kind of alcohol. Every once in a while. With,
like a glass of champagne maybe to celebrate something, or not even really that?
Champagne a handful of times. They liked when we would have Chinese food. They liked, there was a plum wine that both my parents enjoyed. A
didn't
margarita.
You have Chinese food like once or twice a week?
We ate Chinese food a lot, but when they would make the Chinese food, they would have plum wine. If we got carry out, they would not. But if they spent the day making Chinese food, we would have plum wine. But neither of them were really big drinkers, so the only time I had alcohol as a kid is if I had a toothache, they would give me blackberry brandy. And
it numbs it.
Put me to sleep.
It's the same thing as vanilla extract. It really is. It's not like they gave you a shot glass of it. They'd rub a little on your, a little pinch between the tooth and gum.
Normally, it was a little bit on a cotton ball, but there were a couple of times with a
no
bad
wonder
toothache.
You're such a lightweight when you drink and you need like little cocktail umbrellas. And
when I go to, if I'm having a drink, I always ask the bartender, could you put it on a cotton ball? And they always look at me like I'm crazy.
Does this drink come with cream de menthe?
That's so funny.
One of my wife's favorite stories, if she ever really wants to embarrass me, she will tell the story about how on our second or third date, I can't remember which, there was a restaurant downtown called Mel Markins for years and years and years. And we went in there, and I wasn't much. Do you remember Mel Markins?
I used to think it was upscale. I used to pronounce it Mel Marcones.
No, it's Mel Markins.
I know. I learned
it's
that.
Mel Markins.
I never even heard of it.
It's a pretty famous restaurant in Lincoln Park. It's been gone for years, but it was a mainstay for years and years. And it was our second or third date, and I looked at the drink menu, and there was one drink in particular that really appealed to me. And here's what it was. Ready? It was champagne and raspberry ice, and it was called a raspberry bubble. And I said to myself, I will have one of those raspberry bubbles. And Jerry said to the waiter, is he the first guy that's ever ordered one of these? And the waiter just smiled.
Oh, is that funny?
Yeah.
So, was it good, though?
Kids, daddy's having raspberry bubbles tonight. Right, it's going to be a long night.
Don't bother him. He's enjoying his raspberry
he's
bubble
in
after
a raspberry
work.
Raspberry bubble mood. It's been a rough day.
Well, for years and years, I mean, my wife and I have been together over 30 years now. We'll still go to a restaurant, and she'll ask the waiter or waitress, my husband enjoys the raspberry bubble drink. You don't have any of those on special, do you?
That is so funny.
They
I would
don't.
Like to start calling you Raspberry Bubbles.
Oh, please. That'd be great. That'd be
our
fantastic.
Bubbles.
Yeah, that's my rapper name.
I like it. I like to drink, too. I'll just come right out and say it.
Mm-hmm.
I love having a cocktail. I will be having margaritas today. Mm-hmm. I look for occasions to have a cocktail. I don't have too many.
Right.
But I'm thinking about this. My mom would, at family picnics, we had, God, what did they call it? The silver pool. That's what they called it. It was just a silver bucket that you can now buy. It's like galvanized steel that you use as an ice bucket.
Oh, I know what you mean
to put
now.
Your drinks in. All right. But the reason our family called it a silver pool is when my cousin Susie was a youngin, a little baby or toddler, that would be her pool that she would swim in.
Oh.
It wasn't that big. Wow. We weren't that wealthy.
Would they wash it out between?
Yes.
Oh, they did. Okay, good.
And they never confused to dip her in the big ice component of it. It was usually warmer water.
All right, that's good.
So we'd always have the silver pool loaded with beers for family picnics. And usually, you know, in the summertime, you'd have one a year, maybe two.
Yeah.
And then you'd put this beach blanket we always had on top of it to keep it very cold.
Mm-hmm.
And, the soda was in there as well as the beer. And I would ask my mom, can I have a sip of your Pabst Blue Ribbon? And she'd be like, all right, whatever. And I loved it, like right away.
How old were you during this?
Under 10, 10-ish, you know, not a baby, but 10, 12.
But if you saw 10, somebody 12, giving their 10-year-old a Pabst Blue Ribbon, what would your thoughts be? If you were
she gave me a sip. It wasn't like she would stand right there and say, all right, go ahead. Because I get annoying when I want something. Can I please try it? Can I please try your beer?
But when your mom would start to go chug, 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 wouldn't that be a problem?
Because can I tell you something? My mom very rarely drank, and except for these family parties that we didn't really have that many of, she'd have maybe a quarter of a beer, and that would be it. So then I would go, could I just finish it?
No.
And she'd let me.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's abuse, don't you think? Well, that, I mean,
at 10, it seems young.
I don't know the age. I don't know the age. Maybe it was older than that, guys.
I'm thinking
I don't
more
really
of the Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Oh, that part's bad.
It was good.
Right.
Oh, my God. Ice
give your 10-year-old better beer, folks.
Exactly.
Please.
That's a terrible way to start off a kid.
Kevin, did your parents ever give you some beer when you were underage?
Yeah, I mean, I would like ask to try a sip here and there, but I never liked it that young.
I must have been older than 10. I really don't know age-wise. I really don't. You know me. I don't remember any kind of landmark or anything in my life. But I do know that she would have, like, she'd drink maybe a half or a quarter of the can, and I'd say, can I just finish it? Yeah, whatever.
Oh.
And I was home. I wasn't going out.
Yeah.
And I love beer. That's what it says on my bumper sticker. I love beer.
Now, you know not to ride a wagon after you've drank beer at that age, right? You wouldn't do anything dangerous,
only
would you?
Only if somebody else is pulling the wagon.
Then it's all right, I guess.
But here's the thing. My mom didn't drink that much, but I was able to try it at a younger age, and I like to drink. So now enter my kids, who are 13 and 16. My 16-year-old, the only time he has ever had a sip of alcohol is he was at a Sox game with Jimmy Mack, and he grabbed the wrong cup, and he spit it out,
mm-hmm.
and never had any alcohol again.
Oh.
And he said, I can't wait till I'm 21. I want my first legal drink to be with Dad. And I said, that's really cool. And all my friends are like, ah, yeah, that's not going to happen. I think it is going to happen with this kid. My younger kid? I don't know. We have never given our kids any alcohol at all. It's not like, here, you want to try this?
Right.
Even if they ask, I don't even like them to taste coffee.
But you probably experienced this. There were probably a handful of families when you were going through high school that would let their kids have parties. And
Do you think I was never home? I was always at their house.
Those houses, yeah. Yeah, I'm not positive that's a great idea.
Well,
I don't know.
I'm just curious about something because a story on CNN.com, kids allowed sips of alcohol are more likely to drink in high school, according to a new study.
But doesn't that make perfect sense? Because that's their parents' way of saying, yeah, we've been there, we've seen you drink, so the door's open, have a few drinks. That makes sense.
It does make sense, but then it's like, you know, my mom... I'll never forget Carla Felicia, a friend of mine since sixth grade, writes for Mike and Molly, who's wrapping up this year of the season and the series, actually. And I could drink at her house. Mm-hmm. I hung out at Carla's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then Carla would come to our house like on Thanksgiving or Christmas. And my mom would be like, oh, Carla, can I get you a drink? Now, Carla's very short.
Mm-hmm.
She's under 5 feet tall. So I don't know where my mom got the Vicks NyQuil glasses, but it was like a little tiny shot of Bailey's. And Carla would look at it like...
In a Vicks NyQuil glass?
Well, that's about the size of it. And it's, you know, plus it had been sitting in the liquor cabinet for 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have alcohol in our house. We weren't big drinkers at all. And I don't know. In a way, I thought maybe if our parents gave us a sip, it was saying it's no big deal.
Exactly.
That's the point.
Sure.
But it turns out that you do get a hankering for it then.
Well, but that's the point. Your parents are indicating that it's no big deal, so they're probably more likely to you know, there aren't as many obstacles to them trying it in high school.
But then there are people who wait and, you know, until like they go away to college maybe for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And there are people that drink too much and don't know how to handle it. I had a friend who wanted to let her child drink before they went to college. And I said, well, does your kid drink? No, but, you know, she might at some point. So I want her to feel what it feels like when alcohol kicks in, so she knows how to handle herself.
I guess I kind of understand. That's like one of those measles parties that people have.
Kind of. I'm a little confused about all that, because isn't that something that, I mean, I can't tell you. I don't remember the first time I ever got drunk, but I remember getting drunk on, oh, boy, I think I should have had a couple, 10 less.
Was it on Pabst Blue Ribbon?
No.
It was not. All
oddly
right.
enough, it was on blackberry brandy on a cotton ball.
I understand. I understand your predicament. All right, let's take a quick break. Your thoughts on this? According to the study, on was it on CNN? Did you say?
CNN.com? Kids allowed sips of alcohol are more likely to drink in high school, says a study. I want to know what you think. I might have had a couple of drinks underage.
Possibly. All right. 312-981-7200. Your thoughts are next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Kids allowed sips of alcohol, according to a new study, are more likely to drink in high school. Kids allowed, here, let me give you some of this study that was published in the Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Drugs.
All right.
Children who had sipped alcohol by the sixth grade were about five times more likely to have a full drink by the time they were in high school, and four times more likely to binge drink or get drunk.
Are you I'm not shocked at all, are you?
See, I think it just depends on where you live, what friends you hang out with,
Those are factors.
That type of a person that you are. I mean,
those are factors, but isn't it your parents' way of saying, look, we're on board with the fact you're going to be drinking. We've seen you drink. Go ahead, drink. It seems like it makes sense.
The study involved surveys of 561 middle school students in Rhode Island. They have a problem out there. Over a three-year period, all that lobster.
Yep.
A little under a third of the students said they had sipped alcohol by the start of middle school, with most of those saying they got the alcohol from their parents at a party or a special occasion, like a wedding or something like that.
Yeah.
26% of the kids who had sipped alcohol said they had a full drink by the ninth grade.
Wow.
Who didn't? One full drink by ninth grade?
I'm trying to think if that would have applied to me. I don't know. I can't
it's
remember.
It's freshman year. I was a bad girl, and yeah. I really wasn't. But it's the weird thing. My mom hardly ever drank. I mean, we were Italian. If I went to Uncle Leo's house, they'd mix wine and water, and you'd have it with a Sunday meal, but not even a lot of it.
He didn't have grappa coming out of his faucet or anything like that?
No, he made his own.
Did he?
Uncle Leo made his own wine, and it would be watered down for the kids, and you'd dip your biscotti in it. You would. It would just be a little tiny, like, you know, small glass of it, just because that was the tradition.
Sure.
So
well, the drinking age in Europe is like 4, isn't it? You can get
4 months,
maybe 4 months. You can get a drink when you're a baby in Europe.
So 26% of the kids who sipped alcohol said they had a full drink by the ninth grade versus under 6% for the kids who never sipped alcohol,
oh,
according to the survey. But I don't know if we can blame our parents for that. I mean, I have not allowed my kids to drink, yet I drank when I was younger. Why?
Right.
There's no reason for them to.
Well, yeah,
plus
but
you can
your
get
mom
sued.
Could have made the same argument about you. Every parent could have made that same argument about their kid. What, was there any more reason for you to be sipping alcohol than for your kids to
no,
be?
No, but that's what I'm saying. Since I was given alcohol, I'm surprised I haven't given my kids.
I see. Okay.
But there's no reason to do that.
Right.
Plus, there are these new laws that have changed things, too. You know, you had mentioned that there were high school parents... high school parents that would let kids drink at parties.
Sure.
Well, now if that happens, you can
There's
lose your
problem.
House.
Right.
You can.
Right.
I just don't understand why anyone would do that. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how are you doing this morning?
Good. You drinking for Cinco de Mayo yet?
I am not. Actually, I am 11 years sober now.
Oh, congratulations.
Wendy.
What? All right, he is shaming me, Ryan, but there's a point to your call. You had drinks with your parents and developed a problem from it.
I did. I had my first drink probably when I was in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. You're supposed to have milk and cookies.
What did you have in kindergarten, Ryan?
I had a beer, and actually, that was absolutely ridiculous.
Wow.
You know, one of the things that's kind of interesting is both my brothers had drinks early on as well, and my father was an alcoholic too. But one of the things that by allowing us to have drinks early on, it showed us that there was really no respect for alcohol.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of allowed us to think, you know, that we could have it as much as we want, and we were allowed. And we were one of those households, too, where my parents were like, you know, your friends can come over and drink as long as you don't leave the house. And we were the house that people came to all throughout high school. As a matter of fact, our refrigerator was stocked with beer all the time.
I wish I knew your address back then, Ryan.
Yeah, St. Louis, Missouri. So,
oh, it's for kind
Ryan,
of a far
that,
drive.
That buys you temporary coolness, doesn't it? When you're the house that everybody comes to because you know there's alcohol flowing, for a while, you're like the coolest guy in town, aren't you?
For the most part, yes. But when I look back at it now, it's really kind of a sorry situation. Again, all three of us boys became alcoholics. We've lost jobs. We've lost relationships.
Yeah.
Lost money. But like I said, when we started drinking early on, we had no respect for alcohol. And I do agree with what was said earlier on that, you know, it depends on the parents, it depends on the type of person you are. And, you know, some people with alcoholism, it runs in the family. It's also personality traits that allow it to happen. I know for myself, I tried getting sober many times, and finally it clicked. Again, I just, you know, had enough pain, so to say. I now have a four-year-old, and I won't be one that gives him his first drink. I'll be one that tells him my story, what alcohol did to me, the importance of respecting it. You know, when he does turn 21, I will not hold him back from having his first drink. I will let him know if he has any questions, if there are any problems with it, that he can come to me first. I won't judge. I'll just be there to help. But I do think that it's a slippery slope. You know, it's not
well, awful. You've completely turned it around, it sounds, and 11 years sobriety. Congratulations. Keep it up.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.
You guys have a great day.
You too.
You as well. And even though my mom would let me finish the rest of her can of beer, she never allowed me to drink. We couldn't drink in the house. And in a way, it was like alcohol was kind of a no-no. This was like once or twice a year she'd give me a sip of her beer. So
yeah.
I think I might have gone the other way since she was so strict about it in the sense where I'm not going to buy you beer. You can't drink underage. What are you doing?
Right.
That I went out and did it my own way. So it does depend on the person as well.
Yep, definitely. All right, a break is coming up. Steve has the news and then a whole bunch of stuff. It's our Cinco de Mayo celebration. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
How about this, Bill?
Beautiful.
Are we going to keep this going through the whole rest of the show
today? The whole
today?
Rest of the show. Beautiful. Guys, that's sensational.
This was so amazing. Let us officially introduce to you the Mariachi Heritage Foundation. Do I have to the rest of that?
Yeah, you have to finish it, but just be warned, whenever you say the name of their group, the Mariachi Heritage Foundation, they say si, senor.
Excuse me, honora senorita?
Oh, can you alter that just a little bit to make Wendy feel better? The Heritage
Mariachi Heritage Foundation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Si, senora.
Oh, Senora.
Yeah,
what's
that's
the
better.
Well, here, let me.
Senora's probably the best.
That's better.
Okay, I took French in high school. It hasn't helped me at all for today. I should have taken Espanol. Cesar Maldonado is the president of the Mariachi Heritage Foundation, and you must be very proud of these kids right now.
Extremely, extremely proud.
They range in age. I believe we wanted to know the youngest player. Why don't you tell us who the youngest player is?
Our youngest player is one of our vihuela players. He's in sixth grade. His name is Daniel Bautista.
Can we say hi to you?
Danielle, that sounded so good. And Danielle, how old are you? You're 12? Very nice.
12 years old.
12 years old.
He's a little shy one.
His instrument is larger than he is.
All right, and I didn't realize that there were so many different sizes of acoustic guitars. These are a particular type. Are these mariachi guitars?
They're Mexican folkloric instruments. There's a big guitar that's our bass guitar.
So that's almost like an upright bass,
exactly.
Sound-wise, but it's a little smaller. It's bigger than a guitar, but smaller than an upright bass.
Exactly.
Acoustic bass, is that what it is?
Acoustic bass, exactly. And then the five-string little guitar is called the Vihuela Mexicana. And that's our rhythm guitar. And then we have the classical guitar as well that keep the rhythm of the ensemble going.
This is amazing. Okay, we have 12-year-old Danielle. Is that
we
who?
Do. We
okay,
do.
And who is the oldest member of the group?
We have a couple seniors. We have three seniors, two from Lane Tech High School and one from Whitney Young High School.
And how old are you girls?
17.
That's still young. I mean, I say the oldest, but seriously.
Right.
So tell us a little about how the Mariachi Heritage Foundation. I'm waiting. Oh, you guys are not.
It's been
not
a long
ready.
Day for the group. Right?
It's been a long day. We've been at it since 4:30 this morning.
Wow. You guys aren't
it's
even.
Been
gonna...
It's been a great day for us.
But you're not going to be able to celebrate Cinco de Mayo because you're going to be so tired by 2 this afternoon.
And then we still have to go do homework.
Homework.
The good news, no school today, right? Si, senora.
Yes.
What's the difference, by the way, between senorita and senora? Am I too old to be a senorita?
It's not marriage, it's age. It's really marriage. If you're married, then you're a señora. If you're still single, it's señorita.
Sometimes I wish I was a señorita. All right, tell us the history of the Mariachi Heritage Foundation.
Sure. We started about 4 years ago, and we started a program, a curricular-based program in the schools. We're in 7 schools currently teaching mariachi as part of the general curriculum.
Yeah.
And we're in schools that are predominantly Latino-based in the southwest side of the city. And these are schools that didn't have music programs before.
Wow.
So after 2 years of instructing music on a full-time basis, some of these kids really, took it to the next level. And we started identifying extremely good talent within the schools. So earlier this year, at the beginning of this year, we decided to form an all-city ensemble program where any student from Chicago Public Schools can audition and be admitted into one of the programs. So we did our first audition in February, had about 140 kids, and we accepted 70 kids. And the kids that are here today are students that form the advanced ensemble. And our grades in this group range from 6th to 12th grade.
I have goosebumps.
Congratulations, guys. That's quite a feat to pull off. Very, very nice.
It is. Very proud of them.
So they already had some musical training. They didn't learn these instruments from being in the group. They already had they had some knowledge.
They came with a tremendous know-how. Yeah. A lot of them are in orchestra programs. Some of them are in band programs and other mariachi programs. Thanks to them and to their families that have really taken an interest in music. And a lot of these kids, we have Angelica, for example, has been playing violin almost 10 years now.
Tremendous.
So it's kind of cool to put them together and celebrate our culture, our tradition in the form of mariachi music.
So is it true that this Mariachi Heritage Foundation was founded 2013?
2013, that's correct.
And since that time, more than 1,700 students have taken part in this program?
Yep, we have currently 1,700 students in our 7 schools that are going to mariachi class at least 3 times a day a week. So it's a curriculum-based program. They get a grade. Their attendance is expected, et cetera. So they're graded just like they are in math and reading.
And isn't music fun, you guys?
Yes.
A lot.
I mean, I know there's pressure. They've been on the TV stations this morning. They're coming here on a radio station. They're going to be on TV this afternoon.
Yeah.
It's pressure. But it's fun pressure, isn't it? Don't you get like an adrenaline rush before you're going to play?
You know, our first performance was last weekend for the Chicago White Sox. We played the national anthem. The first time the kids wore their new suits that were delivered from Guadalajara, Mexico, custom-made just for them.
They're beautiful.
Great performance at the White Sox. The video on social media went nuts. It went viral. We're just really proud of them, proud of young students embracing their culture, embracing their traditions, and playing this music.
Do any of you hope to go into this professionally, like when you're done, like have a career in music when you're done with this? Yeah, you do. Many of you do. It's not easy. Did you ever hear of One Direction? I was in that group for a while. It's not an easy lifestyle.
He is a liar. I want to know how much kids practice. I have two kids. One plays guitar, one starting to play the drums. Do you guys really practice as much as you should?
Yes.
Yeah.
They do,
how often?
Don't they?
About every day? Do you do every day?
Yes.
Every day. That's a lot. That's a lot of commitment.
So fun. We're going to take a quick break. Why don't you give Cesar Maldonado is in... Cesar. That's better.
Yes.
Cesar Maldonado, president of the Mariachi Heritage Foundation, in the studio. The website is mariachiheritagefoundation.org. And you also have a Facebook page?
We do. We're very active on Facebook, Mariachi Heritage Foundation.
And if parents are listening that do want their kids to take part in the mariachi program, all the information can be found on either the Facebook page or the website, correct?
Yes, and we'll have another audition for this ensemble in September once the next school year starts. We're going to Disney World at the end of June. We've been invited to perform at Disney World, so this group's going to be performing.
How exciting is that? Wow.
There. And then our big event, June 26th at Millennium Park, is the second annual Chicago Mariachi Festival that features this group as well.
That's great.
How about we take a quick break and we'll come back? Will you do another song for us?
Absolutely.
Si, senora.
Si, senora.
Come on, you said you were going to say it, but Mariachi Heritage Foundation.
We'll be back.
Si, senora.
Oh, beautiful. Well done, everybody. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy and the Mariachi Heritage Foundation.
Si, senora.
Absolutely, on WGN.
All right, we are back in action. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder.
The Mariachi Heritage Foundation is with us. Don't let them scare you. They just tend to do that when you say their names.
You know, can I just tell you, I have never been a teacher, but I want to be a teacher just so in unison people will say something back to me. That was really cool, you guys.
That was great. Cesar Maldonado, the president of the Mariachi Heritage Foundation, is also with us. And I couldn't help but notice all these kids are here and they're doing a great job. They're all between the ages of 12 and 17, Cesar. But there's one little boy in the back who almost looks a little older to me. Is it possible that little guy in the back could be more than 17 years old?
He is one of our teaching artists.
Oh, he is.
Okay, yeah, talk into that microphone. And you're
microphone.
More of a teacher, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
He does look a little older.
Just
a
couple years older. I wasn't sure.
Danny, could you just say hi to us? Come on, right into that microphone.
Hi.
That's perfect.
Because everybody's saying, you know, you're the youngest one, so they protect you, I hope. And they also say you're a little shy. So, say Happy Cinco de Mayo or something, just to prove to them you're not.
Happy Cinco de Mayo.
That was perfect. Si, senor.
All right, and we have Suli, correct?
Yes.
Okay, now, how old are you, Suli?
I'm 14 years old.
14 years old. What a beautiful young lady. All you people look so much older than you really are. You're professional musicians.
How about that?
Yeah.
What instrument do you play?
I play the violin.
How many years have you been playing?
I've been playing for 9.5 years already.
That's fantastic. Seriously?
Yeah, starting kindergarten.
Oh, wow. So somebody in your family early on, I don't know if your mom or dad, are they into music? Nobody in the family is.
First generation.
Really? They must be extremely proud, are they?
Yes.
Yeah,
they are.
I would
very
think
proud.
So.
There's something about watching your kids play a musical instrument. I mean, a lot of people's kids are into sports, but just seeing the musicianship you guys have is really amazing. Do you guys get goosebumps when you hear really good music? Because I do.
Yes.
Sure.
You have us all covered in goosebumps, and we're hoping you'll do it again. Will you guys do another song for us?
Absolutely.
Okay. We'll talk to, while you guys are getting set up, Cesar Maldonado, president for the Mariachi Heritage Foundation. I love this. I want to be a preacher or a teacher right now because this was really fun.
Sure.
Is there anything that we need to know about this particular selection they will be playing?
Sure. So this is the national anthem of Mexico, the other national anthem of Mexico, which is El Son de la Negra. It's a son jalisciense. And features a lot of the rhythmic instruments as well as the kids will be singing.
Okay.
And then you'll hear the nice melody on violins.
And we have to stand for this because it's the national anthem and remove our sombreros.
It's the unofficial national anthem. It's the mariachi anthem of Mexico.
Oh, it is. Okay. Yeah. Very
so
nice.
So we can sit.
We can sit for
you
this.
Can sit and right. enjoy and right. enjoy the kids.
Mariachi Heritage Foundation live here on WGN Radio. smiling, wow. And I cannot stop stomping my feet. I can't keep still during that. That was awesome.
Unbelievable.
Third grade for the day?
Yep.
A+?
A+ easily. So good, you guys. You should be very proud of yourselves. What a great job.
And congratulations to you, Cesar Maldonado, president of the Mariachi Heritage Foundation.
Sí, señor!
That's beautiful.
This is so fun. Can you guys just stay all day? This is look, the most respect I've ever gotten in my life.
And if you need a triangle player, you have my number. Call me. I mean it.
Give us your website and your Facebook information again.
Sure thing. Facebook, Mariachi Heritage Foundation. And then our website is mariachiheritagefoundation.org. Anyone interested, we do have a fundraiser going on next Friday, May 13th at the National Museum of Mexican Art. $25 donation, and kids will play. And then check us out at Millennium Park on June 26th for the second annual Mariachi Festival, as well as Disney World at the end of June.
Y'all looking forward to that a bit? Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine.
Do they let the guitars and violins on the rides? Or no, you have to
probably
leave
not.
Them.
You got to check them at the door.
It's interesting. We teach our students to take very, very good care of their instruments.
Good, you should.
And these are all your own instruments. These are expensive.
They are, especially the Mexican folkloric instruments that we have to get imported from Mexico.
Yep.
Absolutely
yep.
beautiful. Yep. You guys did a fantastic job.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
The rest of your Cinco
Thank
de Mayo.
You. Thank you. Thank
it's
you so much.
The Mariachi Heritage Foundation.
Sí, señor.
Love the sound of
Gracias.
That.
Gracias.
Take care, guys.
Thank
Thanks
you.
So much. News is next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I cannot stop moving.
Yeah, there's something about the mariachi sound that just...
Si, senor.
That makes you just dance, I guess.
I just could not... I was a toe-tapping.
Yeah.
And somebody has texted us, thanks to the Mariachi Heritage Foundation, ages 12 to 17, they came in to perform for us after being on one of the television newses this morning. At noon, they're going to be on another television station. They
they're
did
heading to
have,
Channel 2, I believe. I don't know where they were this morning, but I know they're on their way to CBS.
Being the mom and a food-obsessed woman, I'm like, aren't you guys hungry? Are you going to have a chance
sure,
to eat?
Sure, you were worried about them.
Because they're growing kids.
Right.
They're ages 12 to 17, and they said they had a decent breakfast.
Right.
And they're going to have lunch later on, but they have a lot of snacks.
Yes.
So that made me very happy.
Yes. My favorite moment, I hope you'll remember it, is when you invited one of the members to sit on your lap. I thought
was that on the air?
I don't know if it was on the air. But
I don't think that was on the air.
It brought a mix of emotions to the kids. Some of them seemed okay with it, and others ran for cover.
They did not. There was Danielle, who is 12 years old, and he's a little shy.
Yeah, very shy.
And he didn't want to talk on the microphone, and I am a dork.
Right?
I'm sorry. I turn into mom mode, and I'm like, oh, you can sit right on my lap and talk into this microphone. And they laughed, and I heard a gasp.
Yep. There were some shocking noises.
I was only trying to help.
Of course you were.
Someone has texted and said that the music was making them hungry.
Believe me, I get it. There's something about that music that you just go, boy, I could go for something, some lunch right about now. I understand it. It's funny how in a restaurant, many times if a mariachi band is strolling around, you don't want to make eye contact because you go, they're going to come over and I'm going to be with them for the rest of the meal. But when they were here in the studio playing, I could have listened all day. They were great.
Well, because you knew they were leaving.
Maybe there's that.
Do you really don't make eye contact? I can't help myself. When they're strolling around in a Mexican restaurant, they come over to the table,
right?
And I feel if you don't look at them, they're going to stay all night because they know you're uncomfortable. So you just get into it, and you're like, oh, wow, you're really great. Here's a 20, go away.
Right. There's always that. Yeah.
I just don't like the people watching me eat. I really do have food issues.
Yeah. Well, that's if there's guys singing and playing at the table, all eyes will be on your table, and I don't know. I'm always good for the one song, but once you get into second or third songs,
and
then
how
it
do
gets
you
awkward.
Nicely say, okay, that's good.
One is enough.
One
is
and
good.
Done.
One and done, please. Be like the Bears.
Well, happy Cinco de Mayo. Cinco de Mayo?
Yes.
All right. Yes. You know, I've worked in radio a long time, and I started out playing classic rock on the Loop radio station, and I always thought the ZZ Top record was called Deguello.
I don't think it is.
Many, many years later that I realized the double L is the yes sound, so Deguayo.
Yeah. Deguayo, is that
Deguayo.
It? Yeah.
Or de Guayo, it doesn't really matter.
In keeping with our theme of Cinco de Mayo, in a little bit, our friend Jeff Gerbina from Tamale's Restaurant will be by. You will have a chance to sample it yourself. Jeff is very generous and has a nice giveaway planned for you. So if you love good Mexican food, we'll tell you where to get some in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Still to come, you know, for years people have been eating on the radio, and it's really not good when you're a listener.
True.
So we've made a new mandate that if we are eating on the radio, then you too will benefit from it. So I believe our next guest will be giving away a little something for this fantastic restaurant that you introduced us to.
Yeah, Tamales in Highland Park is one of the finest Mexican restaurants I've ever eaten at, and it's a friendly, not only great food at extremely affordable prices, but a great atmosphere. And Jeff, the owner, is one of the friendliest restaurateurs I've ever met. We've had him on before. He's very generous, and will give some lucky listener a chance to sample his restaurant. And why wouldn't you want that?
Why wouldn't you? I hope he brings margaritas. This is a free day to have margaritas on Cinco de Mayo.
Can I tell you what I found out early this morning? I'm doing a little research for the show and getting stuff ready, and I find out, and this is a shock to me, and I think it will be to you as well, that the margarita is not Mexican-based as we've always believed. Did you know this?
I did know this.
This is the invention of a man named David Wandrich, an Irish bartender who lived in Tijuana. He invented the margarita. That's surprising to me. I always thought that's probably your most authentic Mexican drink, the margarita. Uh-uh. However, over at Huffington Post, they have recommended other drinks if you're looking for something a little more authentic.
When mojito? It comes,
you know, the mojito isn't on there, but I would imagine it would have to be, right?
I've had a good homemade mojito. And I have to say it like that, of course.
Say it one more time for me.
Mojito.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And, you know, you muddle the mint. I didn't think I'd like mint in a drink, but when made properly, fantastico.
It's pretty good. If the mint isn't overpowering.
Yes, because right? It could ruin a drink.
Right. If the mint is overpowering, you have a problem. But if it blends in with everything else, then you're doing okay. They recommend a drink, and this sounds so good to me. It's called the Paloma. This constitutes, it's tequila, it's made of tequila, grapefruit, which I'm a huge fan of, lime, and soda. It says it's Mexico's most beloved cocktail. Why have I've never had a Paloma for some reason. Jeff Gerbina joins us right now, the owner and proprietor of Tamale's Restaurant in Highland Park. Is that as popular as we're being led to believe, Jeff, the Paloma?
Those are usually what you drink in shot glasses when you go to Mexico and you have that guy hold that dirty rag over your mouth and shake your head.
Really? That's yeah. Where you'd have a Paloma.
Is that what happens? I've never had that happen to me in Mexico, so I'm booking a trip right now.
It's not ether. Don't get too excited.
What is this drink, Jeff? Explain this to me, and I'm going to say it wrong, so I'll spell it out for you. P-U-L-Q-U-E.
Pulque.
Pulque. What is pulque? What are we looking at there?
If I'm not mistaken, I believe there are three stages to the tequila making process.
Yeah.
And out of the first stage, you get pulque.
Yeah.
Out of the second stage, you get mezcal.
Yeah.
And out of the third
stage... That's the one with the worm, right? Mezcal?
Correct. And out of the third stage, you get tequila.
Oh, really?
And then of the tequilas, you get the plain blanco, which is completely unaged. You get the reposado, which is, I believe, 6 to 18 month aged.
Oh, my God. If you're right, I am going to be so amazed.
And
I don't
then
even
the
care
añejos,
if you're right.
Which are over 18 month aged.
And which one? One of them has more of a smokier taste to me. Is that the reposado or
no,
the añejo?
No, that's the añejo. The blancos, they say, are for shots. The reposados, they say, are for margaritas. And the añejos, they say, are for sipping. I don't know who they are.
But if they say it, they must know what they're talking about. Pronounce it one more time for me, Jeff. P-U-L-Q-U-E.
Pulque.
Pulque. All right, here's what it says here at Huffington Post. Pulque is the ancestor to tequila, dates back to the Aztec times, when pulque was a highly esteemed drink of the elders, priests, and warriors. The myth says that it was so highly regarded because it came straight from the 400 breasts of the goddess Mahuel. Where do you buy
a
sports
bra?
She was
very popular. Oh.
It's impossible to...
Sorry, I
it's
stepped
impossible.
On it. But she was very popular.
Oh, extremely popular.
How many breasts?
400.
Pairs?
No, total. wow.
There is nothing else
There's
to
nothing
say
else
but wow.
To say. Dios mío.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the restaurant, if you wouldn't mind. Tamales, as I've said, is one of the finest Mexican restaurants I've ever dined at. And you, this story is so exciting to me.
Thank you.
You started as a busboy there, and now you're the owner.
I am head dishwasher some days. Most people in the restaurant business will tell you we don't really have titles.
Yeah.
We get paid the last. If that was a title, that would be our that would be our title.
All right. So this is your place. Bill introduced me to this restaurant, and I have to tell you, the food is authentic. It's wonderful. I did not have a big introduction to Mexican food. I thought Taco Bell was Mexican food until my husband said, hey, you know what? Maybe you should branch out a little bit. And Mexican food is amazing.
Well, I remember from last year, you should tell your husband to come up a little more often and visit his parents.
Yeah.
They live right by.
That way you can, because they live close by to the restaurant, and that way you can come in a little more often.
It is so good. I have recently been really into a chili relleno.
I happen to have brought some. I heard that rumor today, so I brought some with me.
But can I ask a question?
Sure.
Why are the poblano peppers, that's what's used in that?
Yes.
Why are some of them sometimes really, really hot and some of them are very mild? Do they just vary like that?
The same reason I always use this analogy for people who might not understand that. The same reason sometimes you get a red, ripe, juicy watermelon and sometimes it's all white and tastes like the rind. There's really no rhyme or reason. They can come from the same exposure, the same sun exposure, the same element, the same plant. I am not aware if there's ever been a distinction as to why and how that happens. There are things that you can do in the preparation to try to alleviate some of that, but it's a natural product.
It's so good. Just, Chihuahua cheese, and they're breaded and fried. It's
like a
chicken fried pepper.
Pretty much. Without the white gravy.
Right.
Ours are done a little bit different. We live in a fairly health conscious day and age and community, you know, where the restaurant is. So they don't like a whole lot of fried stuff except for the chips. So mine are actually done on a flat top griddle.
Oh my God.
So that way they're not as greasy. They don't sponge up. You know, you put anything in a deep fryer, it gets all spongy and it soaks up all that grease.
Yeah, right.
Ours just don't do that. Ours are done on a flat top griddle, but they have two or three different kinds of cheese. It has a Chihuahua, a Monterey, and an Añejo. And
isn't that a tequila too?
Absolutely. The word Añejo really just means aged.
Wow. I'm Añejo.
I wasn't going to say that, but I guess you can make that comparison if you wanted to.
You can, I can't.
Jeff, the outdoor season is just starting now at Tamales. The indoor is great. Love eating indoors, but there's something about sitting out in the middle of Highland Park on a summer night. Boy, you can't beat it.
Love it.
Yeah.
You know, there's been times, and I was just thinking about this on my way down, where I've scheduled myself to have the night off because I have friends in town.
Yeah.
And I have to run into the restaurant to do a quick errand. And then I sit down, or my friends sit down waiting for me to, you know, to do a little bit of work before I'm able to leave. And we end up not leaving until 9 o'clock at night, saying, well, that wasn't really a night off, but I didn't want to be anywhere else, you know?
Right. Time goes very fast out there.
Yeah. You get to eat and drink and be merry and see nice people and nice community.
Yeah.
Clean as could be.
Yeah. It's really
good. I enjoy
it. It's really, really good.
And also catering, if people are having parties in the general vicinity.
That's why I'm a little bit late today. Everybody kind of forgot it was Taco Thursday, not Taco Tuesday this week, and got a little bit excited. Cinco de Mayo, I had maybe 3 or 4 calls last minute. You know, and if I don't take care of my customers, somebody else would want to.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. And that's why you're successful, because you care so much.
I love it. I'm really fortunate to have the job that I have and the place that I have and the community in which I have it.
We had Jeff cater when Reese and Kylie graduated from high school last year. It was Tamales that came and catered, and everybody loved it. They wanted the girls to graduate every year. I had to explain that can't happen. That's a once every 4 year thing.
You can keep having more kids.
I'll mention that to my wife. I'm sure that'll go over really well.
That would be very Cinco de Mayo-ish.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? It really would.
What should we do to celebrate Cinco de Mayo today?
You should come to my restaurant or any other Mexican restaurant in the neighborhood. You can drink a margarita. You can drink some pulque. You can have some tequila. Even just if you have a Corona, that's okay.
All right, good enough.
And as long as you smile and maybe give out a little Mexican rebel yell. There you go.
Jeff, that was Wendy, terrible.
That wasn't the best rebel yell. Wendy has a new thing now where she asks guests to sit on her lap.
She started this
a little while ago. So if you want to, you don't have to.
Listen, there was a 12-year-old mariachi player who was too shy to step to the microphone. And
this sounds
I said,
like a hustler letter.
If you would like to, you know, come on. You can use this microphone. You can sit on my lap. The mom kicked over. I'm not asking Jeff to sit on my lap.
All right.
I got all excited.
No, too late. Oh, it's too late.
Maybe it wasn't really a microphone for a minute.
No, please. Jeff, you've done this in the past, and I'm hoping you'll keep this tradition alive. We've had you in on other Cinco de Mayos. You've been very generous in giving a listener a chance to come and sample the food over at Tamales. Is that intact today?
Absolutely.
How do we do it? What do you want to, just a gift certificate or a gift card or something?
Yeah, I brought one with me. So in the past, we've had to connect me with them, and I had to send it out. But this year, I brought it with me.
Oh,
so
nice.
That way, you guys can send it off to whoever the lucky winner is.
Thank you for doing that.
What number caller do you want to do?
Caller Cinco.
Oh, I guess that. Duh.
It had to be. It had to be. 312-981-7200. Call right now. Be caller number 5. Caller Cinco for Cinco de Mayo. You'll win a fabulous gift card to Tamales Restaurant in Highland Park. If you love Mexican food, this is the place to be. You can't do better than Tamales in Highland Park. Call right now. Be caller 5 at 312-981-7200.
And 493 Central Avenue in Highland Park is the address?
Yes.
Website?
Excuse me?
Website?
I'm sorry. TamalesMexicanRestaurant.com.
All right. Simple enough. And can I just say, despite the fact that it's authentic, healthy, and very tasty Mexican food, you make the best homemade key lime pie I have ever had in my life.
Absolutely. People put it up against some of the finest. I'm not going to mention my competitors, but some of the bigger names, bigger restaurants out there with multiple locations owned by the big conglomerates. You know,
seriously,
I can do you one better. I've had it several times in the Keys, in Key West. It's better than the Keys. That's how good your key lime pie is. I don't know how you do it. It's the lime whipped cream you add to it.
Yeah, and I brought some of that along with me today also. All of our desserts are homemade. A lot of information is becoming more public these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the way some other restaurants do things that has been publicized.
Mm-hmm.
All of our sauces are made in-house.
Yeah.
Our chef, Juan Herrera, he's been in the industry for probably 30 years, if not more. And he just has a lot of cool tricks of the trade. And he loves doing everything from scratch. Absolutely everything.
Yeah.
If I have a shrimp sauce on a shrimp tamale, he'll take the shrimp shells, boil them down, and liquefy them.
That's amazing. You can tell the difference,
unreal,
too, as soon as you try it.
He's
you
unreal.
Really can.
All right. A gift card is going out to Paul from Oak Park. He was the Cinco caller today, the fifth caller.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to come over to Tamales and clean the sink after his meal.
That's the deal.
Thank you so much for doing that. And congrats to Paul in Oak Park. He'll be heading out to Highland Park, 493 Central Avenue. And a gift card to Tamales Restaurant is his.
Thank you, Jeff.
My pleasure. Dinner and drinks
it.
For two whenever he shows up.
Wow.
Very nice.
That's
very,
better
very
than
nice.
A gift card.
And all I ask is he please introduce himself so I can thank him for listening to the show. We're all avid fans.
Oh, you're the best. Jeff Gerbina, again, the restaurant is Tamales in Highland Park. Head on out there. You will love it. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard porn.
Not today.
Not today he won't. Dean Richards is here, everybody. Dino DeMaio.
You know what I've wondered about this song? It says, grab yourself some popcorn.
Right.
What if I care for a different delicious snack during the whole thing?
Some snow caps?
Is maybe a jujube.
Uh-huh.
A malted milk ball.
Uh-huh.
If you know,
Mike and Ike's,
Twizzlers.
Twizzlers,
yeah.
Sure.
We have to have various versions of that song.
Right.
I think
for each of the different snacks, it just seems fair to me.
But then, yeah, what rhymes with Twizzler?
Oh,
what rhymes with nachos and chips?
say it on the air. I got one for you, Dean.
Oh, Dean, don't open the floodgates. Please don't open the floodgates.
I may have heard that one before.
Dean, I have to tell you, last night, my wife Terry and I went to see Jungle Book, the new Jungle Book.
Oh, boy.
And we're in a theater with not a single child. Now,
what?
I know it's Wednesday night. 7 o'clock Wednesday night. But
we all know illegal for children to right. be out past 5 p.m.
You can't bring kids out after 5
on a
Wednesday.
They can be arrested if they're out.
Right. right. But it was such a nice experience. The movie was beautiful.
Of not having the children, you mean?
Of not having kids in the theater. But I would think a movie, a Disney movie, The Jungle Book, you'd have it, at least a good percentage of kids in the movie theater. But it was 30-something adults, every one of us enjoying the movie. A stunning movie to watch.
Isn't it?
Right. And your thoughts on it being a little too intense for kids since it's real and not cartoony?
You know,
because that's what my husband said. It was.
There are a few moments that are intense, but overall,
for all intents and purposes, what do you think?
I would highly recommend The Jungle Book. I loved it. Didn't you, Dean? That was a great movie. Wasn't
and don't
it?
Forget, it is Bad Pun Day on the Bill and Wendy show today.
Today so is. Yes.
Send your bad puns in. I had the same concern when I saw it. The movie's been out for a month, something like that?
Oh, just under, yeah.
I have not had one person express that concern to me after taking their children to go see it. Nobody has said, I liked it, but it was too scary. I don't know anybody say it's too scary for little kids. And, you know, Jon Favreau, because, you know, I love to name drop whenever mm-hmm. possible when I talk to him before the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought up this concern to him, same concern. He said that classic Disney movies are not as politically correct as movies are now. You know, if you think about the really old school Disney movies, you know, somebody's mother was being killed.
Almost always.
But not in real time. It was cartoony. It was still sad
sure.
and heartbreaking.
It's animated. It's not as real looking. And that's the point that I made with him as well. But he said that he doesn't think that we give kids enough credit for being able to handle these kinds of things, like, you know, movie intensity, that they're still able to discern what's a movie and what's real. And
you watch kids play video games now. I mean, like, the NHL hockey game is just like watching the Blackhawks.
Right.
It's so realistic that right. you're right. Kids are, we do need to give them more credit.
Yeah, my little nephews had the biggest laugh possible because they were playing, it was one of these NBA games, and I walked into the room when they were playing, and I was like, oh, they're watching a game. And, right. you know, I was like, oh, so what's the score? And they're like, Uncle Dean, it's a video game. Idiot. Stupid idiot.
It looks so real, I can't yeah. believe it.
Yeah, the graphics are, I mean, everything about this movie is so stunning to watch, and it pays nice homage to the early Jungle Book, I think 1966. It's one of the first movies I saw in a theater, and it always holds a special place because of that. But there's a couple tips of the hat to that original movie.
Yeah.
And how about the fact that, for people who don't know, Bill Murray voices Baloo the bear, and Christopher Walken voices King Louie the orangutan. And there's something about the way they made these animals look where you can see Bill Murray's facial expressions.
Really?
And Christopher Walken's. It's really well made.
Well, you know that they do that when the actors are doing the voices. They videotape the recording sessions so they can capture the facial movements of the actors while they're recording them and incorporate them. That's done all the time.
Mm.
I'm not a bit surprised at that, but I mean, really, when you think about a Baloo, is there anybody but Bill Murray?
Perfect.
Really, that you can think of?
He was perfect.
Who fits that, you know, the character. But it's just mind-dropping to me that everything in this movie is fake except the little boy.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. And that this little boy, it was his first audition and his first movie role, the very first thing that he ever does in acting, period, is this very complicated role of acting opposite tennis balls and green screens. And
not easy to do.
Not easy to do at all.
Right.
So I think it's magnificent, and I'm about to give Captain America a really good review, but I'm still saying Jungle Book is the best movie of the year so far.
How about that?
I want to talk about Captain America, the Civil War. My 13-year-old son, Dylan, has really turned me on to a whole life of things. He had a legal version of Deadpool on his Xbox One, which Bill accused us of pirating.
I thought you had stolen it.
But we didn't.
All right.
And so Dylan turned me on to Deadpool. Can I tell you, that might be one of my all-time favorite movies of all time.
Deadpool is a fantastic movie.
I loved it. And it was raunchy and dirty, and yet I loved it.
Wendy.
Yeah, it was very me.
Wendy.
Okay, shush. But so Dylan...
If he wasn't only an alcoholic, then we could have had a trifecta.
Darn it.
So Dylan's already getting hyped up for this Civil War thing. He plays HeroClix. The Civil War HeroClix came out last night, spent $40 on those. So it looks like I'm going to be seeing this Captain America Civil War. Will I be liking it?
I think you are going to like it.
Awesome.
I think you are going to like it. Do you want me to tell you about it now, or do you want to...
No, let's take a quick break, and then we'll discuss this. It's supposed to be one of the films of the year. Dina's going to tell you all about it. It's Captain America Civil War. That's up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we're talking to Dean Richards. I'm anxious to find out about Captain America Civil War because I have a whole new life now. Deadpool has changed my life. Can I just say that? So now I'm moving forward and going to movies only with my 13-year-old. And Bill, if you want to come with.
How about that?
You will be pleased, I think, with Captain America. Now, it's not anywhere near as irreverent as Deadpool. Certainly, it's not as raunchy. It's not at all as raunchy as Deadpool, but it's still tremendously, tremendously entertaining. I mean, this is truly one of the best action movies that has come out in a very long time. A couple of really little minor things that I'll tell you about in just a minute. But although it's Captain America Civil War, this really is an Avengers movie. And I took off just like minor points for this. It really should just be called, you know, Avengers Civil War, because that's really what it's about. Captain America is as much a part of this story as is Iron Man or Robert Downey Jr. or Black Widow, Scarlett Johansson. Falcon, played by Anthony Mackie, has a pretty big role in this. Don Cheadle's War Machine. Hawkeye is back, the archer, Jeremy Renner. We've got Vision, the superhero Vision, played by Paul Bettany, and Elizabeth Olsen's Scarlet Witch has a big role in this. The Winter Soldier, Sebastian Stan, pretty big role in this. And the additions of Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man.
Young Spider-Man.
This is young Spider-Man, kind of teasing the upcoming Spider-Man movie that'll be coming up. We get to see that. And it's so entertaining. The Spider-Man section of the movie, very, very entertaining. Chadwick Boseman, who played Jackie Robinson, who played James Brown, is in this movie as Black Panther, an excellent addition to the cast. A little bit of Paul Rudd in here as Ant-Man. So you can see everybody's here.
You didn't mention Thor.
I didn't mention Thor, and I didn't mention Incredible Hulk.
Uh-oh.
They're not there.
No.
They're referred to in the movie. If only they were here. But they never really explain why.
Can I guess, Dean?
Everybody's there except
maybe
them.
A fishing trip? Are they on a fishing trip?
I wondered about that.
Could be.
I thought maybe a B&B in Saugatuck.
Maybe that's what they are.
You know, everyone knows that the Thor and Mighty Hulk are huge into antiquing.
They love B&B.
See, now that's kind of what I thought this movie was about, and I will admit something that is going to make me look really stupid.
What?
I am not a comic book girl. I don't know much about the X-Men or the Avengers or whatever. Mm-hmm. So when my son was all into the Civil War, I'm like, oh my god, they've cartoonified like General Custer and Stonewall Jackson. I didn't know it was comic book stuff.
No. That's that's the other thing that just bothered me a little bit, because I'm a little bit of a stickler that if a movie is part of a trilogy, for example, you need to be able to watch whatever part of that movie all by itself,
sure,
and completely understand what's going on. Shouldn't be dependent on knowing the mythology and the history. I was talking with some comic book buffs here at the TV station yesterday, and they are way into the comic books in this whole Civil War mythology, much more than I was ever exposed to.
You mean Tom Skilling, right? Tom Skilling?
There are some surprise comic book heads that you know and see on TV that you would be very surprised spend as much time as they do with comic books.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but
right.
They do. But I think that's a little bit of the case with this, Wendy. I mean, it's not going to be a plot killer in any way, but there are lots of things that they expect you to know when characters are introduced and who they are and what their powers are and what their weaknesses are. Doesn't kill the movie in any way. It's still a fantastic movie, but it would have been stronger if the movie could stand on its own.
Oh, how about that?
I think the movie could stand on its own. So I took off just really minor points for that because I enjoyed the movie so much. This is the basic plot line of this, and this is pretty spoiler-free. I'm just really going to tell just kind of the basic premise of this. I'm not going to give away anything that's going to ruin the movie for anybody. But the movie opens up with one of the most spectacular opening scenes that I've ever seen.
Ever in a movie?
Ever.
Wow.
Ever, including Gone with the Wind.
Wow. What?
And the Jazz Singer. And you know I'm a huge...
You love the Jazz Singer.
I love the original Jazz Singer with Al Jolson.
Can't beat Jolson.
He was really one of the best superheroes
of all time.
He and his partner, Mammy, were the great...
The great Larry Parks.
But it's a really spectacular scene in which the Avengers are, there's evil going on, and the Avengers tear up this city, trying to bring down the villain who's doing this, causing lots of damage, causing death. I don't know if causing more problems than they had in the first place, but the United Nations becomes concerned that the Avengers can just go do whatever they want, and they want to have control of the Avengers so they don't just go someplace, tear up cities, mm-hmm. kill innocent people. So part of the Avengers think that that's a good idea and side with the United Nations, and they want to do that. Part of the Avengers do not. They want to remain independent. So they have this split in philosophy of how to pursue this. And that's really the basic premise of this, you know, so-called civil war.
It seems plausible, doesn't it? That seems perfectly plausible.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there could be a disagreement in here within that and how it plays out and with how they begin fighting, how it becomes intense. Are plot lines that you're better to discover in the movie yourself, because they're very slowly and I think very cleverly unveiled. The script in this, I think, is exceptionally good.
Mm-hmm.
The performances are, I think, exceptionally good. Some of the characters are a little bit stronger than others. And I got to say, I mean, Captain America is fine, but for my money, this young Spider-Man in many ways steals this movie.
Is that right?
Because he's such a breath of fresh air. In this whole thing, in many ways, the comic relief of the movie as well. It's the other thing that I liked about this. There is such heart and humanity in this movie, yet at the same time, there is a real sense of humor. They very often don't take themselves very seriously.
Good.
Not to the point of the irreverence
of
Deadpool, but there's also... Which just when things are starting to get heavy, somebody says something or something happens that completely lightens up the movie and just says, you know, we don't take ourselves as seriously as, you know, we might think. So overall, all in all, I just was completely delighted with it. It's 2.5 hours long. The movie zipped by. For my money, the movie zipped by really quickly. I didn't feel at any point that the movie was dragging in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it at the Navy Pier IMAX Theater. See it on as big a screen as possible.
Really, yeah?
And okay. I don't often recommend the 3D. I don't often think that it's worth it. I think in this case, it's pretty worth it.
All right.
So there was a couple of minor things I took off. Gave it a Dean's List A-.
Oh, that's not bad.
Still Dean's pretty
List
good.
A- yeah. is pretty good.
And you've given me a little job opportunity for Dilly Mac. If you want to rent a 13-year-old to explain the backstory, he will go see it with you.
Oh, wouldn't
and,
that be a nice...
keep you up to date on some speed.
Turns out I got plenty of 50-year-olds here at the TV station who can do exactly the same thing.
Dean, we're thrilled.
You know that plot line is implausible.
Right, of course. You're going to get that. Well, thank you. That's good news for anybody who wants to see Captain America Civil War, and that opens, of course, on Friday. Thank you, Dean. Have a great weekend.
You have a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day to you.
And to you and your mom.
Wednesday. When your name's,
and
you were,
Wednesday.
You were definitely not in the Addams family. I know you were not Wednesday.
Well, I'm Greek Mother's Day is Wednesday. The Greeks celebrated on Wednesday. We don't know why.
Thanks, Dean. I appreciate it. And
my
to
mom,
your mother,
by the
too.
Way, my mom is going to be on my Sunday show, by the way.
She is.
She's
good.
Much more popular than I am, so she's going to be on Sunday morning.
I find myself listening to you every Sunday. It's just perfect for my schedule, so keep up the good work.
Just like drugs.
It is. Thank you, Dean.
I'll see you guys.
Dean Richards, he's just like drugs, everybody. We'll be back and find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Great job, Kim. Here at WGN Radio, we have some specialty programs that happen once in a while. And who does that? Kim Gordon actually does that. And you have another tease or report that you will be giving us.
Well, actually, I'm gonna give you the news. Yesterday, you know how some days you have a good day at work, and then other days you have a
sure.
really cool, amazing day
yeah,
at work.
Of course.
Well, that was
when
my
will
day
that
yesterday.
Happen?
That's
well,
gonna happen.
I had one yesterday, so you're not far behind. So, in my series that I do every other month called "Who Does That," we look at interesting jobs across Chicago. And yesterday, I got to meet the man who's behind Buckingham Fountain, the man who makes the fountain work, who makes sure it's clean. Who takes care of it. You know, the fountain's going to turn 90 years old next year.
Oh, really?
And it's amazing. Yeah. And so I met Dan Dust. He's the chief engineer of the Chicago Park District. He gave me the tour. And at the end, I actually got to click the mouse and turn the fountain on.
You did that?
Yes.
You did?
I did. It was so cool. Really, really cool.
It's very exciting when you're driving down Lakeshore Drive and, you know, you see tulips popping up and, you know, spring has arrived and summer's coming. And then very soon thereafter, you're going to see that fountain.
Right.
You have turned it on for this season.
Well, I haven't officially turned it on because that's Saturday, but they were running tests. So I got to actually click the mouse and turn it on. So
that's how you turn this big, beautiful behemoth on by the click of a mouse.
Yes, the click of a mouse. And actually, up until like the early 90s, for a while, that was all run in Atlanta.
That's what I was
now
just
it's all
ask.
Been brought back to Chicago. And it's interesting because there's this little pump house that's inside the fountain gates, but it's kind of buried underground. So you just see this like circled dome and a part of windows sticking out. It's very near the fountain.
Yeah.
Kind of on the east side toward the lake. And that's where the operations are. And, you know, everybody's so interested in looking at the beautiful fountain that you don't notice that this
is there someone in there, Kim?
Well, I would say it's manned. There were a lot of people in there yesterday because they're getting ready. But, you know, I would say that there's people there pretty much all day, every day, making sure everything's going. I mean, you know, it is run by computer, so
right.
it's run. But they do need to go in there. If there's a problem, they can shut it off. Let's say there's an event and they need to change the timing of the running of the fountain, they can go in there and do that. And then, you know, all the pumps and all the motors are down below.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are people always checking that to make sure that they're running okay because the pumps, the motors, everything is original 1927.
Is it really?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you even get a spare part if something were to go bad?
You know, that's a good question. That's one thing I didn't ask him, but they certainly...
eBay has it? Yeah.
Yeah. Buckingham Fountain, big part.
Right. It's not hard to find. When I was a kid, I know this will make me sound like a doofus, but I'm okay with that. When I was a kid, I didn't realize that it was the lights that were changing. I thought they had different colored water that was somehow being coordinated to present a presentation. And then during when I was in college, somebody explained to me that that wasn't the case.
Well, and interesting about the lights, of all the things that goes wrong the most, it's the lighting.
Is that
because
true?
They're the ones that are in the elements and actually submerged in the water.
Yeah.
So that's one of their biggest problems.
Well, that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
And a little tie-in yesterday, we had Michael Whitwer in the studio.
Yeah.
And he has done some work when the Buckingham Fountain was restored several years ago. He was in charge of that
mm-hmm.
renovation restoration project. And he also is very familiar with the campuses, the museum campuses. And has there been any update whatsoever on the Lucas Museum of Narrative Arts, Kim? Because I know yesterday Rahm Emanuel wanted to take this case from Friends of the Parks and get an appeal done and stop this so we could move forward, because this has been 2 years in the making.
Right.
It's been all over the place, and I didn't know.
Yeah, no, I don't think we haven't seen anything new as of today. So I think yesterday.
Same as yesterday.
Yeah, pretty much the same as yesterday.
Right.
But just getting back to the fountain for one more second.
Yeah,
sure.
If people go to our website, WGNradio.com, we were able to take video. You can see me turning on the fountain. You can see the pumps. You can see the motors. You can see the interview with Dan Dust, the chief engineer. And then tomorrow on the opening bell and on Justin Kaufman's show on the download, there'll be like a 2-minute piece talking about what it takes to run Buckingham Fountain.
That who does that? That's a really cool job to have and an important one.
I think that's one of the most romantic places in the city. Before my wife and I were married, we would often go there and just sit
Make
there and
out.
Watch. Sometimes.
There's so many people running around.
Depends
though.
On the color combinations. If the color combinations
if they're red.
Got us in the mood. Right. If
it's
it was mostly
Bill
red.
It's the Bill Left's mood fountain.
Right. Right. If we saw a lot of red, we would go at it. Yellow and blue kept us at bay.
Can I tell you that is the best thing about summer in the city? I know there are many things that the city has to offer, but driving down Lakeshore Drive, getting stuck in traffic sucks, but then you look over and look at that fountain.
Beautiful.
It is unbelievably beautiful.
It is absolutely beautiful. And yesterday, you don't realize how large and expansive it is because there's usually so many people meandering and walking around. But yesterday, it was all closed off because they're still pulling things from the NFL draft. And so it was, the whole area around it was empty.
Yeah.
And so you just can't imagine how wide and how large it really truly is.
And you know,
so impressive.
Mm-hmm. I know we all had fish growing up. I doubt you did, Bill.
Yeah, I had a perch. We had a family perch that we had in the tub.
You know, you don't realize, you think, oh, it's water, nothing's going to get dirty, but it gets dirty clogged up, so that is very interesting.
And Kim, I'm curious because I know it's been around for years and years and years and years, and we've made a lot of advances technologically. In the early days before computers were prevalent, how did they run it? Like now it's all computerized.
Well, there's actually levers, and the old levers, and you'll see on the video, there's actually still the old levers are in there that they left them in. Obviously, they're not used anymore, but there's all these different levers that you could sit there and just adjusting the water and turning
Imagine
it on or
that.
Turning it off. Yeah.
I want to go green and white. Now I want to go yellow and orange. Now I want to go blue and green. You know, that'd be tough.
Life before computers, people.
Yeah. It's a lot different. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very interesting, Kim. And again, when will this be running?
Well, anytime on the website and tomorrow morning on Steve Grzanich's show, the opening bell, and mm-hmm. then Justin Kaufman on the download sometime during his show.
All right, good. We'll be listening.
Thanks,
that sounds
guys.
Good. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll find out what's next. It's us. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Can I tell you?
Clutch Gargle with his pal Spinner and Paddlefoot in another exciting adventure, The Big X.
Wendy, not now. I'm watching Clutch Cargo with his friend Spinner and Paddlefoot. I don't have time. That was a plausible show. That was about a grown man, an adventurer, who hung out with a young boy and his dog. That was extremely plausible, wasn't it? And nothing moved except their lips.
And it was so... It just was so disturbing, yet I couldn't stop watching it. It was like that accident on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Their lips were so ruby red.
Right.
They were almost burgundy.
That's all that moved was their lips. The animation was the worst that's ever been, but their lips would move.
This is what we were
trying to go for.
Keyboards. This is Dean Richards playing it with no pants on.
Is that true?
No. What? Garfield Goose, can I do my impression?
Yeah, what do you got? Nice to see you today. Thursday morning. That's how Garfield Goose used to talk.
He really would have hurt you. Like, you know, a lot of kids would like to go up to a puppet and get a kiss by them or kiss them.
Yeah.
That beak would hurt you.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
That would really hurt. Can we talk about a different type of goose? Not Garfield Goose, but Canada Goose?
Yeah, why? What's up?
We were talking to Kim about the Buckingham Fountain, and when you walk around the city, and can I just tell you, going shopping at Oakbrook Shopping Center, there are Canada geese all over the place,
mm-hmm.
and there are signs saying do not touch, disturb, or bother the geese.
Why are they congregating at Oakbrook Shopping Center?
I really would like to know that answer, because in all, like, the planters, the above-ground planters...
Yeah.
I was standing out there in front of an Auntie Annie's because they have great pretzels.
It's an outdoor mall, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that explains it. They can't go to the indoor malls.
Oh, all right.
All right. Let's move on to our next topic.
That's true.
But so they're in the planters.
Yeah.
And there's like a mom goose. I don't know what her name
Mother
was.
Mother Goose.
Okay. Thank you.
That's fairly obvious, I think. Right.
Oh, sorry about that. I should have known.
Yeah.
She is on a nest, and there are eggs right there.
Yeah.
And you could just walk up to her. Despite the signs that say don't touch, tease, or poke at the geese, you're walking around. It's right there. And how come they're not biting people or snapping at people?
I don't know.
They don't snap.
I heard earlier Matt Bubala did a report with DNA Info saying that for some reason this year there's just an influx of them.
Well, he did the report on how many, how much it eliminates.
Yeah, there's a lot of... goose waste. Right?
Yeah.
There is, like, way more than there should be.
Well, I have a couple of fast facts about Canada geese, and then we'll tell you about their potty.
Yeah, stay tuned for that, everybody. Don't switch channels.
When I worked at Brookfield Zoo for many years, I would give tours on the old steam engine, the railroad train, and then move to the motor safari. And at one point, we would, there are a lot of Canada geese walking around. And at one point, we said Canadian geese.
Yeah.
And we were corrected because it's not a Canadian goose, it's a Canada goose. And a lot of people make that statement. If someone, If you say Canadian geese, it would indicate that these geese actually lived in or came directly from Canada, but that's not their deal.
I don't understand why they're
not
say
they're not residents of Canada, so you wouldn't say they're Canadian.
Yeah.
They are Canada geese, and they are one of the best known birds in North America. Found in every U.S. state and in Canada, but they're not specifically from there. So, like a Canadian resident, hey, you're Canadian?
Oh, I guess. Boy, that's technical, though.
I know.
You getting that complaint a lot?
No.
Or was that just one guy?
It was our boss who said they're not Canadian geese. You know, you work at the zoo, you want to make sure your script is right.
Right.
And I have never forgotten it. I've never called them a Canadian goose again, but I've heard people mention it.
Boy, that's technical, though.
Well, its name comes from Latin, yeah. And that's where all names come. Yours was Bilibus Maximus, wasn't it?
I changed it for the radio, but that's my original name, yeah.
Well, as you mentioned, I heard Matt Bubala from DNAinfo.com mention that, first of all, there's always goose poop everywhere. It's everywhere. You go on a golf course. When I used to go to the kids' soccer games in the morning, you'd have to watch where you stepped. Eat Chicago, Canada goose. Poops a pound a day.
Is that right?
So I asked you how much a Canada goose weighs, and I said about 30 pounds. You don't believe me.
It can't be that much.
That's
impossible,
big.
But 30 pounds.
Yeah, but birds never weigh as much as they look.
Right, because they're so bony.
All right, 14 pounds.
That seems more in order.
All right, I was half wrong.
That seems...
They can get up to...
half wrong.
Yeah. honest to God, I know their heads are little pea brain and that long neck, but that body is big.
But it's not solid. If you grabbed a goose, and I have, I'll tell you right now, don't do it. Let me learn from my own mistakes here. Don't just go up to a goose and grab it. But it's mostly bone. It's not as full as you think.
I guess more feathers than
it's
anything.
A lot of feathers, yeah.
You goosed a goose?
It was a crazy time in my life.
Is that where the term came from?
Yeah.
Kind of miss it, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I do miss it, Steve.
Canada goose, large wild goose species, a black head and neck, white patches on the face, brown body, native to Arctic and temperate regions of North America. Its migration occasionally reaches Northern Europe. So you have an adult male that can go anywhere from 7.1 to 14 pounds.
Yeah.
A female, a little bit smaller.
Sure.
Understandable. 5.5 to 12 pounds.
Yeah.
And they release a pound of doo-doo every day. That's a good portion of their body weight.
Yeah, what's the phrase? Like, what threw a goose?
Right.
Really?
Now you know why.
Yeah.
Wow. That explains it.
That's it.
So watch your step, especially in the morning after the dew is on the grass, because the dew and the poop make it very slippery. You think you're going to slip on a banana peel?
No, this is way worse.
And it's all over.
At some point, you've had this happen, and I'm sorry for being so graphic.
Be careful.
I will temper my comments here. But have you ever gone out in the morning to your car, and your car has just been...
dumped on?
Yeah, but you say to yourself, it's almost as though this couldn't be from one goose or one bird. I mean, it looks like you've been dive-bombed by a squadron of birds. You just go, it's like they planned this. How did this happen accidentally?
I never have had it where the whole car is covered. It's usually just one splotch.
I've had it once or twice where you just go, first of all, what could they possibly have eaten to have produced this?
Berries.
Is that from berries?
Yes, what do you think it is?
I don't know. It looks like, I don't know what it looks like, but it's
berries.
I've sold cars. I've just gone, I can't clean this off. I'm going to have to sell my car.
You're supposed to hose that off, though, because the acid in it's going to eat through your paint.
I know.
Learn from my mistake, who never washes her car. Yeah. Now I better.
So these geese are putting out a pound of acid poop at a time?
Per goose.
Yes.
This is an epidemic.
I know. Yeah, that's what I mean. This is huge.
Come on, Obama.
Hey, Greg, we're talking Canada geese, not Canadian geese. What's up?
Well, I knew that for a long time. I live in Michigan, so that was ingrained in me from about 5 years old. It's a Canada goose.
I don't understand, because it's not a native of Canada.
Well, I know it doesn't come from Canada, so it wouldn't be Canadian.
All right,
I guess the name.
Yeah,
Canada Goose.
But Swiss Miss Instant Cocoa isn't from Switzerland. It's from here in the United States, but we still call it Swiss Miss Instant Cocoa.
We don't call it Switzerland Cocoa.
No.
I don't have the answers. I just know that the technical term is Canada Goose, and Greg knew that too.
All right.
Yes. Well, a long time ago, I'm saying it might have been even 10 years ago, this was discussed on WGN, and some young person called in and had a great idea that it could solve two problems. It says, feed Canada geese to the homeless.
Are they edible? But the why not?
Yeah.
Basically, only the breast, really. Only the breast is edible. But, yeah. I mean,
that's what the male Canada goose said.
I love this channel, you guys.
It's changed a lot, hasn't it, Greg?
But there is something to that. If it's edible, I guess you could.
Your goose is cooked. Haven't you heard that expression?
I have heard that expression.
And
yeah.
you eat well, duck. Why couldn't you eat geese?
While Tiny Tim was looking after the Christmas goose.
Who? Tiny Tim?
Not Tiny Tim. What was the other Tim? From the Christmas Carol.
Oh,
Tiny Tim.
It was Tiny
Tim.
Not the tiptoe through the tulips, Tiny Tim. And be careful for the goose poop when you're tipping toeing.
I don't think he ate meat.
Right. He was a vegetarian. Right. Little known fact.
Really, this conversation is really spiraling.
We will strike this from the record.
We're glad you called.
Don't worry.
Well, Greg, thank you. And if anyone has eaten a goose.
Oh, I've had. You've had.
I've never eaten goose in my life.
You've never had goose at all?
I only like chicken that has feathers on it.
I think they're protected, aren't they, Wendy? That's the problem.
I think now they are.
That's why you
I don't
can't
think it was always that way, but I think they are now.
Wring their necks or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, this is like the most we've had ever. They're not endangered anymore, are they?
When my wife and I started dating, my wife's family had a cottage way up in the North Woods in Wisconsin, and all over the lake there were ducks everywhere, just everywhere. And there were times where if you walked down by the lake, it was obscene how much the ducks would relieve themselves on the beach, despite my
begging
them.
Well, they don't have toilets.
I know that. No, the lake is their toilet, sadly.
And that's better? But you want to swim in that?
No, I don't want to swim in it. I don't want to walk. I mean, it was just, it was awful. And I get it. They're ducks. You can't reason with them. You know, they're just being ducks, but it was all, I didn't want to go to the beach because the ducks were just everywhere with just terrible bathroom habits.
Did they have raspberry ices up there in Arizona?
Yes. Raspberry bubbles.
Your foofy drink in northern Wisconsin.
Yes, they did.
Again, we have to, for people who have just tuned in, if you missed the first half of the show, where were you? We'll wait tomorrow. Bill mentioned, you know, when he used to date his wife before they were married, you would order a wonderful drink.
Just one time at Mel Marken's, I ordered a drink that was raspberry sherbet and champagne, and it was called a raspberry bubble. And I don't know why people find that as amusing as they do.
But what did your wife, Terry, say after you
ordered
it?
She asked the waiter if I was the first guy that ever ordered a raspberry bubble, and the waiter very, very nonchalantly just gave her a look as though, yes, first ever.
You do us all a favor and just say it one more time.
No.
Come on.
No.
One more time.
No.
We're going to call you R-Bubs.
Please
That's
do.
That's your rap name.
That's fine. I'm not embarrassed.
Raspberry bubble.
I'm fine with that.
Our bubs.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right.
I like it.
Let's do this. A break. Steve with the news, and then a lot more show coming your way. It's Our Bubs and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. And I want to just mention that we were talking about Canada geese, and the geese and their nests are protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
So we can't harm them. We can't feed them to people, as was suggested earlier.
Even though they don't really migrate anymore.
They don't, do they? I don't think they do.
All right,
I'm sure some do, but
this is disturbing to me. The geese and their nests are protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. However, people can apply for egg-shaking permits through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Department.
Do you have that number handy? I want to write that down. Hold on.
Listen to how terrible this is. Those permits allow people to take the geese eggs and shake them, which kills the chicks before they hatch.
How can that
be a real job?
Well, if you don't do that, if you just take the eggs or break the eggs, they'll lay more.
Oh, they will.
So if you shake them and the goose thinks that they're still viable,
the goose continues
to sit on the eggs. And,
well, that's sad.
Well, you wanted to kill them 5 minutes ago.
No.
This is a humane way to...
I did not want to kill them. Huh? Some listener wanted to kill them and feed them to homeless people. That was not me. Are you listening to the same show we're on?
Not all the time.
Me neither. But I just, that's terrible. The poor mom is sitting there wondering what's going on. Right. How long is this gestation?
Right.
What the heck?
What the heck? That's what they, that's Canadian goose
well,
talk.
Well, I mean, if they're a pest and you need to, you know.
If they're overpopulating the area, right. You have to do something.
I mean, if you can't get a bowl at Crate and Barrel now because there's so many geese
right.
in line at Oak Brook Mall.
Right. Then it becomes a problem.
It's a problem.
I'll tell you, these flower boxes are up probably to my waist. So as you're walking, there's this big-ass goose sitting there on a nest.
Right.
Like almost eye-to-eye with you.
And are they hostile?
No, they're pretty not? Mellow. But yeah. And I know they have to put signs up there, do not hurt them, tease them.
Yeah, I don't think they're very mellow if you get too close to them.
Especially their nest.
Right.
All birds are very protective.
This one was just sitting there looking at the people walking into Auntie Annie's. Or is yeah. it Aunt Annie's? I don't know which one.
I think
one
it's Aunt Annie's. Yeah, the pretzel place?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just sitting there, and there was an errant egg, away from the nest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's terrible if somebody's mm-hmm. shaking the eggs. I never heard of that before.
That's somebody's job to do that?
Well, no, you can apply for a permit. But see, to me, I don't know. I don't know anything because they're protected, the birds, but the eggs...
Well, you can get a permit to do it in special cases, but...
Mm-hmm.
But not just anybody, right? You can't just apply like,
no,
to be an egg shaker.
No, I think you have to go to school for that.
Right. special classes for that. Right.
All right. Well, I didn't know anything about it. Another thing that I heard in the news that I can't stop thinking about, Bill, is this poor woman who was driving home from the Wisconsin Dells with
terrible.
Her family and was shot and killed...
It's so unlikely and so awful.
It's so random that yeah. I know you're not supposed to be afraid of things, but I'm telling you, everybody at some point since we heard this news thinks about that. Like,
sure,
you
course.
Don't want to cut anybody off. They didn't do anything either. The husband was driving, and 44-year-old Tracy Zukowski is in the passenger seat. Two minor children were in the back seat.
Right.
They've just spent a great weekend at the Wisconsin Dells, and they're coming home, and a 20-year-old gunman had been involved in a homicide earlier in the day, allegedly. And as there was a Interstate 9094, they passed this SUV driven by Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
This 20-year-old on southbound I-90-94, he rolled down his window, fired 3 shots into the family's vehicle, which hit Zukowski in the neck, and she later died from her injuries. It's a terrible story. From reports I heard, beer cans were being tossed out of this car.
Yeah.
I've also heard that this 20-year-old...
from the assailant's car.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And the 20-year-old driving where the beer cans were coming out of didn't like the fact that the windows were tinted on the Zukowski car, so he kind of slowed down to let them catch up.
He was nervous. Apparently, he'd been using marijuana to some excess, and he was a little paranoid, and he saw a car with...
Tinted windows.
Tinted windows, and it made him a little nervous. A lot
so
of nervous.
So shoot?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense at all. Yeah.
And, you know, just the other day I was taking Lower Wacker to go out on Congress to get on 290.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy in front of me who it looked like I was inside a pinball machine. He was driving so closely to the wall in Lower Wacker as the curve is going on to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
He almost bounced off of one wall. So then he kind of overcompensated, never hit the wall, but looked like he was an inch away.
Yeah.
And then overcompensated in his steering. So then he was very close to the right wall. And then I'm like, is this guy drunk?
You
What's the deal?
You want to stay away from that guy.
You do want to stay away from him. So then when we got out onto the Eisenhower, half of you says, I got to pass this guy and get out of here.
Right.
But the other side of me took over and said, no, I'm going to stay behind him because
right.
then I can kind of control the situation.
Right.
So if you see somebody throwing beer cans out of a car, I don't know, I would maybe go to the rest stop for a while.
Oh.
I mean, what do you do? Don't you want to be behind them? Doesn't that give you more control of the situation if they were to do something weird?
You probably want to quickly assess it and figure out what you can do to distance yourself from a car like that, either pass them or stay back. More times than not, I think staying back is the way to play it.
Yeah, because if you pass them and they speed up, you know, they're behind you now, and if they're drunk or something's going on,
right.
You have a better chance of getting hit. I'm heartbroken over this. Summer's coming. These two kids do not have a mother now. This man does not have a wife.
Oh, that's terrible. It's terrible. And Steve, I'm getting this right, I hope. The man driving, her husband, was a DEA agent, but there's no correlation at all.
Not that has been revealed. Okay. I don't know everything that he was doing leading up to the shooting or exactly what happened, but, you know, authorities are saying that it just was coincidence at this point.
Yeah, all right.
Because he had been worked for the DEA agency 11 years, and
the first time I heard that revelation, I thought to myself, "Well, there's
connection,
but nobody seems to be able to find any, so that just strictly seems to be a coincidence."
Well, I just want to know what the proper way to do it if you're following. Do you want to be following someone? Do you want to get ahead of them? I mean, common sense says, I got to blow past this guy and get away from them.
Right.
But then do you want them behind you to come? And this is a terrible situation with a shooting, but even there's been times it appears you see a drunk driver and it's like, you don't want to be anywhere near them. Do you want to keep your eye on them?
I think staying back. Normally, in a situation like that, I'm staying back a little bit just to see where they end up.
Because then you have control of the situation.
Right,
if they do something weird, you have time to react.
You would think. Yeah.
If you pull in front of them, they can catch up to you, and God knows what's coming in your rearview mirror.
Right.
Just 312-981-7200. I just am wondering what the proper way to do this is. Hey, Dave, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Easy way to take care of the whole situation. You got a cell phone. Who doesn't these days? *999. Give them your location.
Call it in.
Road, give them a mile marker as you pass it by, whether it's 9.8, 9.2, whatever it is. Try to give them a description of the vehicle. Give a license plate if you got it. If you're in a problem or see a situation, whether it's an inebriated drunker, DUI, looks like, let them know. They'll be more than happy to come out and double check it. Because first off, the person's got the medical problem, they'll handle it for them and help them get to safety.
That's
true. If they are driving drunk, they will definitely. I watched and turned a few people in as I drive. And I watched one time six squads send out a guy who would pull into a gas station to get gas, and they took care of him. But you have the tools. Use your tools. *999. You'll come on. You tell them your location, a mile marker, whatever town you're in, and you go from there.
Well, we get that, but now do you stay behind them to keep an eye on them on what they're doing, or do you, you know, make the call and just continue about your business?
You can make the call, and if you want to be the honorable.
I'm talking about for your safety, Dave. Like, do you want somebody who's impaired in front of you or behind you, I guess is my question.
If you have an opportunity to pass them, go ahead and pass them if it doesn't entail cutting them off in the process. If it's an open road, if it's a four-lane highway, go ahead and pass them. Don't look at them when you pass them. Don't give them don't flash a one-handed finger. Don't do anything that's going to aggravate them in any way, shape, or form. Just basically ignore them. You've already done what you needed to do, and get away from them as best as possible.
Great advice. Thanks for your opinion. We appreciate it. I used to flip people off all the time. I never do it anymore.
Yeah. Well, except here in the studio.
Well, I know you guys aren't loading, you know, aren't packing.
Sometimes. It didn't seem to work for this lady.
No time. Even if they did call,
it
seemed like it happened.
The shooter's car slowed down and waited for them to catch up. So even though that seems like the common sense way to do it, you're trying to avoid that car. It didn't seem to work in this particular instance.
Although if you see, I don't know, if there's a car that I'm seeing somebody whipping beer cans out of and all of a sudden they're slowing down, I would slow down too. I mean, you don't want to be anywhere near them on the road, do you?
No.
They called when the beer cans were being tossed out the window, the shooting happened so quickly afterwards, it wouldn't have really made any difference.
I don't think it would have. I don't think so.
really sad, and I'm thinking about summer's coming up, and kids are going to be out of school, and they don't have a mom. It's just really heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's awful. We need to take a break. Steve's news is coming up in 10 minutes. We have a lot more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Can I tell you something about Donald Trump that I bet you didn't know? You think, Wendy, I know you. You're always pushing people around going, I know everything there is to know about Donald Trump. Well, I know something about Donald Trump that you don't know. Even the people of Broadview don't know this, Wendy.
You do that very well.
Thank you.
You can sound like a rich woman very
well.
Yeah,
I was supposed to be a rich woman, but something got screwed up in the DNA.
Great, R-Bubs.
All right. So now Donald Trump, as you probably know, is the presumptive GOP nominee.
I presume nothing. Well, it makes an ass out of you and me.
Right. It makes a prez out of you and me. Or maybe out of him.
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah. All right. So here's the problem. Maybe. Or maybe it's a godsend. We don't know. You decide. Because he is the presumptive GOP nominee. Steve, I don't even know if you know this. This is so secret. I don't know if anyone knows this except for me and the people who wrote this over at MotherJones.com. Because he is who he is, and Ted Cruz is gone, and they're all gone.
John Kasich is gone. Officially bailed yesterday.
Everybody's gone except for him. Because he is the lone standing man, he is now eligible to receive the daily classified briefings that usually the president gets these, and the vice president and Billy Deck, those are the only people who get these. But now Donald Trump will also be privy to this highly classified information. So I ask you, the good people of planet Earth, is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I'm okay with it because I want to hear what his take is on things.
What are you expecting? I don't know what to expect from this.
I was thinking about this yesterday, and I was thinking long and hard about it.
Yeah.
We're going to have, if he wins, which there is a possibility we will be saying President Trump.
It's going to be down to two people soon. So it'll be either him or not him, but he's going to be one of the two.
I know, but no one anymore is saying there's no way he can beat Hillary. There's no way he can. I mean, there is a way, and it may happen. So we're going to have 4 years of God knows what.
Yeah.
But I support the president, the office of the president of the United
States. Whomever it may be.
I do, and I'm not moving, so I am so...
Wouldn't it be funny if he gets these classified briefings and then inadvertently reveals some classified information?
That's what I'm afraid of, Steve.
And then he's in the same boat that Hillary Clinton is with her emails?
Yes, yes.
It's like, well, that would be ironic.
Circle gets the square, right?
Yeah. As we all know, his filter, Donald Trump's filter, isn't quite set
right. What filter?
That's what I mean. You need a microscope to find the filter. There's one in there somewhere, but it's not very apparent.
Bill, we got a guy in Iraq, and he's about to take out the...
Right.
But seriously, I'm going to just... What else is there to do if he wins than to sit back for 4 years and maybe he did change everything for the better? What's wrong? I mean, this is how I'm thinking now.
Yes,
I'm not
it
saying
is
I'm voting for him.
No, it's how it starts.
And in fact, somebody posted something on our Facebook page, which I really want to know if they're listening to our show instead of Mike and Mike.
Why? What do they say?
They said, you know, all you do is support Trump and speak poorly of Hillary.
Right.
That is completely the
that's
opposite.
That's not been true. That has not been the case here.
But I'm not saying I'm voting for him, but I'm saying at this point, it's like, show me what you got, and I'm going to have to sit and wait patiently for 4 years.
Right.
You don't know what he's got yet?
I don't.
Really?
I don't know what he has. I'm not voting for him at this point at all. I'm telling you right now, at any point, I'm not.
All right.
There's a secret. It's either Hillary or Bernie. I haven't decided. But I don't know what are we to do?
I don't know what we're to do. I'm nervous at the prospect of when and if he is president that he has access to these daily briefings as the president. But right now, that's even scarier to me.
They can't be giving him
They have to. That's the way it's set up. Is one
like the real stuff or just the little?
No, the real stuff. Not
classified information.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right. Like who's where, who's doing what militarily in every direction. The stuff that the American public doesn't have access to, but only need to know basis type people know stuff.
Hey, Bill,
he's now one of them.
You know, Melania was going to fly to Turkey, and I told her wait 2 weeks.
Right. That's going to come. It's going to come to that.
Joe, what do you think about this?
If I was in charge of giving him classified information, Just at least to test them out first, I'd give them last month's news instead of anything recent.
That's good stuff, right.
And make sure it doesn't show up on the front page of the National Enquirer where he has friends.
Right.
Awesome. That's a great idea, Joe. Thanks for sharing that.
Yep. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we've got news. Steve has the news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy WD.
You're a hoot, Bertrand.
I'm multitasking up here. We're listening to the president, and...
Steve Bertrand is a fantastic journalist.
The best.
And he is monitoring the other things. But it just, you crack me up. You really do.
He was off by a little on the names, and that's going to happen. The newsroom is a busy place.
I knew it was traffic.
It's a very busy place. Right. Wendy, if I were to say to you, this is hypothetically, but if I were to say to you hypothetically, hey, there's a guy coming over, and that guy is middle-aged, how old would that guy be?
Well, now that I am probably middle-aged, I would probably say 75.
Would you say 75 is middle-aged?
Yes.
Steve, you scoffed at that.
I'm going to say 35.
35.
Oh, that is not middle-aged.
Right. Well, it is.
So C says 35, you say 75.
I mean, that's the beginning of my range for middle-age, yes.
Kevin, you're almost middle-aged.
Wait. 35 is middle age? Who said that?
Is there Steve one? Said. Are you going with one specific age, Bill, or
well,
age?
There's a new poll out from Marist College, and they asked people what middle aged was.
Right.
And the average answer says it's 65.
I was close.
Most people said 65. Well, here's why it's crazy. And it shows how we, the people of Earth, consistently lie to ourselves. Is that few of us are going to reach the age of 130, right?
Right. I mean, yeah.
I know. So if you're going chronologically, Bertrand is probably right. Although 35 is not.
Chronologically, it's called middle age.
No, it isn't.
What's life expectancy? It's 80, right? A little over 80, 81, 82.
Women live longer because we drive you guys crazy.
That's all she needs to know.
Right.
Right. I was going to go like 78 or something.
It's right around 80.
Right. So. I'm sorry, Bill.
So realistically, if
40,
it should be 40. But nobody, few of us, look at a 40-year-old and say that's middle aged. Most of us are kind to ourselves, and 55, 60, 65 is when we start.
So what are we in our twilight years already?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm 53, and I would think
you're old,
post middle age, or
But when you think about that, and you think of yourself, Steve. It doesn't register, does it? You go, well, I can't be middle-aged.
Well,
that
53
doesn't...
is the new 33.
That's what the 53-year-olds say.
I know, because I'm one of them,
yeah,
too.
Right. What does that make 33?
A fetus. High five me, Steve. That was good.
You missed.
I know, you actually put your hand up. That was really cute.
According to a poll conducted by Marist College, most Americans, 55% of Americans, consider 65 to be the age in which you are middle-aged. Some 34% consider age 65 old. If you said to 34% of those people, hey, there's a 65-year-old guy standing over there, describe him, they would go, that guy over there, that's an old guy.
Well,
65.
It is an old guy. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if you're 65,
you're old.
You're a pensioner. You're retiring. Yeah. If that's not old, what is it?
Yeah.
But
it doesn't mean you have to curl up and die or anything, but why?
It's not old.
It is.
It's older.
The people who are 65 and who say it's not old are the ones who criticize the 22-year-olds for always needing a trophy.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Face it.
How old's Paul McCartney now? Close to 65?
He's older than that.
He's older, I guess. Yeah. Mick Jagger.
They're all around 70.
Okay, so look at 65 and older now. It is not the same as 65 and older 10 years ago. It isn't.
It's because you're closer.
I think Steve's right. I think it's because as we all approach a higher number age, we change the qualification for what middle age and old is.
You guys, when my mom was 40, she looked like she was 80, and she didn't really. But you know what I mean? Like 40 seemed so, oh my God, my mom's 40. When I was 40, I still felt like I did when in my 20s.
And so did she. That's
no,
the point.
No, she didn't. They look different. It's seriously, a 65-year-old person right now, sometimes it's hard to get, like, I can't believe you're 65, because they look so much better.
Right, but
Quit laughing at me.
Well, it's just such a fun sentence. I can't believe you look so much better than 65.
Also, you know what's funny? And you just proved this point a moment ago. If you said that somebody at 65 is old, you cleaned it up a little bit and you said not old, older.
Right.
Older should be worse than old. Older is older than old. But you're right. We qualify it by throwing the ER at the end of that, and that softens it. But in reality,
it shouldn't soften it.
Older is older than old.
So when does middle age end?
When you're dead. Yep. High five me, Bill.
Yep. Yep. Only a year ago, a study out of Stony Brook University in New York found that the age 60 would be considered to be middle age. But now, just 1 year later, 65 is when people are saying.
Hey, I got a question.
Yeah.
How old is the average baby boomer right now? Probably about 65.
Around 65.
So, and they're the big population answering that question.
Yeah.
I refuse to believe that we are baby boomers because
we're not.
Technically, they say we are.
53.
We think we're in the cusp between Gen Xers and baby boomers, and right. We're neither.
Right. Right.
I was born in 63, and that's the last year of the baby boomers or the next to the last year.
Yeah, see, we are technically baby boomers, but I don't really think we are.
So what would we qualify then as being?
Old. Disgruntled.
Old, disgruntled. Miserable.
Right.
Right.
And wrong.
And always wrong.
Well, we call Kevin a millennial all the time. He can't call us anything.
No, he calls us. He calls us some things.
Yeah, it happens.
Don't worry. He's at no shortage of terms to call us. All right, your thoughts on this, old people, middle-aged old people? 312-981-7200. What age are you considered to be middle-aged? Let us know. We'll take your calls and texts next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Well, we're all very dismayed to find out. Did you like that? We're all very dismayed to find out that, according to a poll conducted by Marist College, most Americans consider the age of 65 to be middle-aged. Now, we did the math on this, and if you were going to live to 130, they were right. 65 should be middle-aged. Nobody wants to consider yourself middle-aged at 35 or 40. Realistically, that's upsetting. But a year ago, a similar study at Stony Brook University in New York found that 60 was considered to be the middle age, and now it's 65. So what does that tell us?
That somebody's math is off.
Right. Right. Exactly right.
It's
when I was a kid, I thought once my parents' friends hit 40, now keep in mind this was just me being a kid at the time, as soon as my parents and their friends hit 40, they were old. 40 was it.
40 was old.
When you're 11, when you're 9 and 10 and 11.
Oh my God, they're 40.
Right. They were around when the world was in black and white. But after achieving 40 myself, I realized that I could not have been more wrong. 40 is not old. 42 is old.
We're still a younger 50 than our parents were. I'm sorry.
Oh, without a doubt.
Hi, John. What do you think?
Well, I think the age thing is a range. So if we have young, middle-aged, and old, I would say these days under 40 is young. 40 to 55 is middle age, and anything over 55 is old. I'm 60, and believe me, I feel old when I get up in the morning.
Do you really? And yeah.
I physically, I do. I mean, I still have the mind of a 19-year-old, but
yeah.
You definitely feel, I think you feel a big difference for those of you guys are, some of you are in your early 50s. I think between 52 and 3 and 60, you see a noticeable stamina, you know, difference, physical difference. I don't know if it's different for women, but certainly for men, all of my friends, you know, we talk about it. So I think that those are the ranges. So when we talk about middle age, it's not a number, it's a range, right?
I guess. I guess that does make sense.
All right. That's my speech for the day. Thanks for love the show.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Take care.
All right. Thanks, John.
All right. We're doomed because he said from like 52 to 60, he noticed a big difference.
A drop off. Now, I'm not tooting my own horn, but I can do so much more now than I ever could at any other point in my life. I can run farther and faster. I can do almost anything physically longer now than I ever could before.
You're in better shape.
Is that just going to, I'm in much better shape now than I've ever been.
Well, you've worked for it. That's why.
But is that just going to fall? Like one day,
not
is that just going to fall
working.
Off?
If a lot of times people give up working out or other,
right.
They're eating well because they have a lot of commitments in this part.
I mean, Jim Fix kept running right up until he had his fatal heart
attack.
Right.
See,
until he died running.
That's
yes.
When I said, God, I'm glad I don't jog because really it could kill you. Hi, Rosemary.
Yes.
What do you think middle age is?
Well, I have a saying that when we argue about age, I say age is a state of mind, and if you don't mind, it doesn't matter.
I like that.
That's great.
And it doesn't matter to me because I was supposed to be born dead, so every day of my life is a blessing.
Oh,
I consider life a blessing.
What a healthy way to look at it.
It certainly is. Beautiful. Do you mind us asking how old you are, Rosemary?
I will be turning 69 next month.
Congratulations.
Happy almost birthday.
I got one story to tell you that really cracked me up. I have a very dear girlfriend, and she said, oh, I know you're older than me. I said, well, I'm going to be 69. She said, uh-oh, I take that back. You look 45.
Wow. You're doing something right then. Good for you.
Yeah.
Well,
it's been nice talking to you, by the way.
Thanks, Rosemary.
And happy almost birthday to you. We really appreciate it.
I went to a birthday party. You know, my wife teaches improv at retirement centers, and this guy, Bud, is 100 years old, and he's fantastic in every way, mentally, physically, in every way, and he's 100. I mean, his sons were there. His son is 80, 79 or 80. And this guy was so inspirational to talk to this guy because he's 100 and he's not missing a beat. And I just said to myself, it's possible.
It gives me hope.
Yeah.
One of my cousins, Candy, listens to us every day and she's 101.
Isn't that amazing?
101. I mean, right. I'm thinking about that now.
Yeah.
That's 101.
That's a century plus.
Good golly.
And she's never seen the Cubs win the World Series.
And you're even more than halfway there, Wendy.
She doesn't listen to you, Steve.
She does not listen to Steve?
No.
She turns Steve's parts of the show off?
No, Candy listens to the podcast and has him edit it out.
I don't believe that.
It's an app. It's an anti-Bertrand app. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're great, Judy. How about you?
Well, I guess I'm old. I'm 73. But
you're not old.
I don't feel old. I can do anything I want to do. If I decide to walk 3 miles, I'll walk 3 miles. I cook every day. I go shopping, and I carry 40 pounds of groceries up a flight of stairs.
That's perfect. So
my husband is going to be 78, and when he was 51, he had a quadruple bypass. He's doing great.
Awesome.
He had an ankle replaced two years ago. He works out every day. You know, it's a matter of your mental state, I think. I could lay down and say I'm old.
I do that every weekend, usually on
Wendy
Sundays.
Wendy does it during the show sometimes.
I do it on Sunday. On Sunday, we don't do anything. But we don't feel old.
And that's the key.
It's a matter of your mental attitude.
I agree.
But
I mean,
you would agree that chronologically we are old, right?
If you go by the numbers,
I don't know. Sometimes when people ask me how old I am, I have to think, what year is it?
Yeah.
And when was I born? And then I figure it out. I just don't automatically know how old I am or think about how old I am.
I guess my point is that it's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing.
We don't want to say it because it sounds like it's a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't think about it. I just go about my day. And my friends do, too. I've got a lot of friends that I went to kindergarten with, and we get together. And we're all doing great.
Friends since kindergarten, and you're 73 years old. And I have to ask you this, Judy. I think it's because Bill and Steve and I are all the same age, and we're coming into our twilight years, in a sense. So we're thinking about it more. Since you are 73, I guess when we hit that age, we're not going to worry about it anymore. We just be thankful we wake up every day and have a good life. Is that true?
Just enjoy every day. And, you know, sometimes I'll just stop and look at flowers and enjoy what I see. And I try to live in the moment more than trying to think about what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
Because you have to enjoy today. Because today might be all you have.
Wow.
Actually. So you have to enjoy where you are, wherever it is.
That is just beautiful.
Very
and
solid. Yeah.
Thank you, Judy, so much.
Thanks,
have
Jude.
Have a great day.
Take care.
That's true. Enjoy today because there may not be a tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you don't enjoy today, it'll turn into yesterday. Let's.
Well, now you're just. Now
it's
you're
a Carpenter song, wasn't it?
No, I'm just.
It's every Carpenter song.
Kiss today goodbye, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. When we come back, Wendy will sing Muskrat Love, so you won't want to miss that.
It's Spanish or English?
In English.
It is Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, that's true. Maybe in Spanish. All right. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
This is hokey.
It is a little hokey, Wendy. But show business is a little hokey, isn't it, when you stop and think about it?
It truly is.
Show business is one of the hokiest of all professions. Isn't it sad when you find out that your favorite stars, people who work together, either in film or television, did not get along?
See, I like to think everyone gets along. I don't like to see people have fights.
Right.
But
I'm with you.
I'm surprised to find out a lot of these people. Like, you told me that, who was it that didn't get along?
Eric and Kathy.
Who listens to them?
I don't know.
I don't know who you're talking about. Was it Regis and Kathy Lee didn't get along?
Regis and Kathy Lee did not get along. And that's upsetting, but it's true. They did not get along.
See, I must miss these things.
Well, they don't want you to know because they're perpetrating the myth that whoever's on your favorite show are their friends, right? They pal around together, but they didn't
we
get
along.
We
don't pal around together, but we like each other most times. It's hard to fake that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. Did you know that on The Golden Girls, Beatrice Arthur and Betty White did not get along?
Because Beatrice Arthur was very jealous of Betty White.
Do you think so?
Oh, God.
Why
Betty
do you
White
say that?
Did not have to wear scarves all the time.
Right, but Beatrice Arthur did.
God'll get you for that, Walter.
I loved Bea Arthur, but Bea Arthur she was very tall.
Yeah.
She was just the exact opposite of Betty White, and I could see her being jealous of Betty White's ability to make people laugh. Betty White's hysterical and naturally funny.
Sure.
Bea Arthur never hit that level.
Oh, wow. So you're in camp.
I could write my own book.
You're in camp Betty
in
this one.
Yeah.
It says here, Beatrice Arthur was not fond of any of her Golden Girls co-stars, but she seemed particularly prickly about Betty White. It was my positive attitude that made Beatrice Arthur mad, Betty White explained, adding, sometimes if I was happy, she would be furious. According to the late Rue McClanahan, it galled Beatrice Arthur that Betty White received an Emmy nomination before she did.
See, what did I just say? I just called that one.
That's upsetting, because on the show, it seemed like they got along. And, you know, Beatrice Arthur was in two big hits with Rue McClanahan and didn't get along with her.
She seems like she'd be hard to deal with, that Rue McClanahan.
Do you think so? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You ever meet her?
Mm-mm.
Steve, you have, right?
I interviewed her once. Is
she sweet?
Yeah. Nice lady?
Yeah, she was sweet. I mean.
Yeah.
I'm not believing you.
I'm trying
all
to
of
remember.
A sudden.
No, we had a weird conversation. See? We were standing in front of a map of Chicago and we were like commenting.
What, were you
on
shopping
that.
Together?
No,
why
she
were
was
you
in the studio and there was just a map there and we're like, she's like, I love maps. And
yeah.
I'm showing her the different neighborhoods and everything.
Sounds like a great interview. Where can we hear that?
Oh, don't. Steve is opening his heart, Wendy.
I'm teasing you, Steve, and you know that.
We were holding hands at the time.
Yeah.
She seems like she'd be...
Rue McClanahan you're talking about.
Yeah.
She was a little distracted.
That happens.
And she seemed, you know, very over the top and high maintenance, from what I've seen on the
All
Golden
right.
Girls.
So you're on Beatrice Arthur's side on that.
But I'm on Betty
White's side in that one.
Yeah.
But Beatrice Arthur's side in the other one. All right. All right. Now, this is a classic show business feud. These are two people who were married on a television show but couldn't stand each other, and that would be William Frawley and Vivian Vance. You know them as the Mertzes on I Love Lucy.
Is that
they
really
hated
true?
Each other.
Really?
That's true. That's true.
They were so good. But you know what? The dynamic of their relationship seemed like a couple who has been together so long that they irritate one another, but
right.
there was true irritation underneath
right.
that, huh?
Well, the story that I've read in more than one source is that Vivian Vance, was furious because she was friends with Lucille Ball in real life, and when they were casting the show, Lucy had Desi Arnaz, who was a real-life husband at the time, and he was a good-looking man. And then they cast William Frawley, who's nearly 20 years older than Vivian Vance. It looked more like her dad than
it
her
did.
Husband. And she wasn't thrilled from the beginning that that's the man that was going to play her husband.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You got a role, so you'd be happy about that.
You would think so.
So whoever plays your husband, and if your husband's older than you, then you look hotter.
I think so, too. Very, very, very smart. Very smart.
Do you see I could solve the world's problems?
There's also, what was the show? I read a book once, and I can't remember all the specifics, but when Vivian Vance found out that William Frawley had died, she was in a restaurant and a waiter came over and whispered to her, and then she bought champagne for everybody in the restaurant. That's kind of cruel.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
That is that. Now I'm mad at Vivian
Now you're
Vance.
Mad at the late Vivian Vance. The pair who played Fred and Ethel Mertz for 9 seasons on I Love Lucy were at odds from day one. Vance hated being seen as the wife of a man who was 23 years her senior.
Well, he didn't look that much older than her, in my opinion.
You don't think so?
I mean, I guess when you... But again, age is relative. They dressed Lucy and Vivian Vance up to look older than they really were.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Because even Trixie in the honeymoon, or not Trixie, who, Alice in the Honeymooners?
Yeah.
She wasn't that old, but didn't she look old? They made her look old.
They kind of made him look dowdy a little bit. Right. Here's a quote from William Frawley about Vivian Vance.
That bitch.
She's. That was Beatrice Arthur's quote.
Oh, that's right.
He used Beatrice Arthur's voice. Here's what William Frawley said in a voice very similar to Beatrice Arthur's. She is one of the nicest girls to ever come from Kansas. I wish she'd go back there.
That's funny.
Mean.
That's funny, though.
Very
it's
mean.
Better than buying champagne after you've heard the demise of one of your coworkers.
Isn't that's awful. That's terrible. Now, here's one that I disagree with because I know one of the people involved in this one.
Interesting.
Tony Curtis and Marilyn Monroe, without a doubt, one of the funniest comedies of all time, Some Like It Hot. It
one
says
of my
here,
favorite movies.
Isn't it a great movie?
Fat
Start to finish. That's an interesting cross-section of American films.
And The Watchmen.
Right.
I have a very weird...
It's a strange list of favorite films.
I love Some Like It Hot. They seem to get along so amazingly.
Right. They did not. According to this. Now, years ago, when Tony Curtis was still with us, and I was working in another radio station, we had Tony Curtis on twice, and then I had met him separately. I hosted something that he did in Rosemont, and I got to meet him then, and he was an incredibly nice man. And one of the times we got him talking about Marilyn Monroe, and he said nothing but good things about Marilyn Monroe.
But according to this, no. Hollywood Boulevard, he was hosting a screening of the Some Like It Hot in Woodridge. Same thing. Spoke so highly of her.
They put him in a production of Some Like It Hot in Rosemont. He wasn't playing one of the leads. He was playing a secondary character, but they thought, here's some interesting stunt casting. We'll bring Tony Curtis in.
That's cute. And it worked.
It got a lot of attention. They also told me, I'm hosting this event, so they say, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go out there, and you're going to introduce Tony Curtis, and then Tony will speak for 3 to 5 minutes, and then you'll close it out. And I go, okay, that'll be fine.
So quick in and out. You
in
thought
and out.
It was going to be a quick little thing.
But Tony didn't see it that way. He just, he all of a sudden he had a crowd of people in front of him. So
loved to talk.
Oh, boy, did he. So at the half-hour mark, the people who put this event together said, you got to let Tony know the show's over. And I didn't want to interrupt Tony Curtis.
How do
Curtis.
You go up to Tony Curtis and do the cut sign to him?
He's Tony Curtis. He's one of the most suave men in the history of Hollywood.
Why didn't they do it?
Well, I don't know. I was told it was part of my job description, but the last thing in the world on any day I ever wanted to do was upset Tony Curtis, you know.
So what'd you do?
I came up behind him and I tapped him gently and he waved me off and just kept talking. And then at some point I had to move in front of him and go, Tony, the show's over. And he goes, who are you? And I go, I'm Bill. I'm the host. And he goes, well, I'm in the middle of a story. And he finished his story and I made Tony Curtis upset. But then I did what I think any professional would do. I blamed everybody else. It's not my fault. You're Tony Curtis.
The good news is, people remembered your appearance because he yelled at you on stage.
I was yelled at by Tony Curtis, but the time that I interviewed him, one of the times we started talking about Some Like It Hot, and he just went on and on about Marilyn Monroe and how much fun it was to work with. But it says here, by most accounts, Marilyn Monroe was in full diva mode on the set of Billy Wilder's Some Like It Hot, making for short tempers and long production delays. Now, she's famous for that. If you know anything about Marilyn Monroe, she showed up late. A lot of times she wasn't in the best shape to work.
Drinking? Really?
Sometimes.
Some Like It Hot.
Some or cold, depending on what she was drinking.
I didn't know that. But see, maybe they had some issues on the set of that movie, but not in the grand scheme of life, it's not like he hated her.
I'm trying to remember because I asked him about, I don't think they ever worked together again. I don't remember them ever being in a movie together again. They must have run into each other in Hollywood. They were two of the hottest stars at the time. So I'm guessing at some point they might have interacted at some point. But Tony Curtis said, here's an ugly quote about kissing Marilyn Monroe, because there's some love scenes in Some Like It Hot. Kissing Marilyn Monroe was like kissing Hitler.
All right, that's
bad.
And how many times did he kiss Hitler?
I don't know that he ever kissed Hitler. I'm trying to remember. I don't think he ever did. She didn't have a mustache or anything, did she? Marilyn Monroe? No, she didn't have a mustache.
Not that thick.
So I think he was being extreme when he said that.
That's terrible.
That's awful. All right, we've got more of these. Your favorite stars from TV and movies did not get along. Who are they? We'll find out next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. We are talking about Hollywood feuds.
These are co-stars that you would think they're playing friends or even a married couple on a TV show or in a movie. Or maybe they're lovers in a movie like Tony Curtis and Marilyn Monroe. But as it turns out, they did not get along. We've got a lot of people calling us at 312-981-7200. Let's start out with Larissa. Hi, Larissa. Now, is this true? Because I'm reading up on the screen, but this can't be true.
Bill, this is so true. Don't ask me why I know this idiotic information.
That's all right.
Andy Griffith and Ann B. She hated him.
Frances Bavier.
Hated, yes.
Hated yes, Andy Griffith.
She did.
Why?
When they would take, I don't know, but when they would have breaks in between shooting and everything, she had a little sewing machine. I had this big story on her, and she would go off on her own, and she used to make quilts.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't talk to anybody, but mostly Andy Griffith.
That's so upsetting, because they seemed so friendly when you'd watch the show. I can't believe
it's all a sham. Serious, yes. Hollywood, there's some great actors, and that's what they did. They acted.
Pretended. Wow.
I know we all believed everybody.
I have two more.
Oh,
who else?
I have two more.
You're like our own gossip girl.
I know, yeah, cockamamie information. Abbott and Costello.
They didn't get along?
They didn't get along.
Oh, that's upsetting, too.
And last but not least, well, I don't know. You guys would probably remember Laurel and Hardy.
Sure, of course.
Okay. And the skinny one, which one was he? Laurel
that's Stan,
or Hardy?
Stan Laurel was the thinner of the two.
Yeah. Big wife beater.
Oh,
he
no.
He had like... Yeah, he had like five or six wives. I think he beat up two of them.
Oh, I hope that's not true.
The skinny one, they could have beat him up.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that's so upsetting. All right, well, thank you, Larissa. We appreciate that.
You're welcome. Okay, bye.
All kind of hearsay.
I'm not doubting Larissa, but I have to look that up because I know that Dick Van Dyke absolutely idolized Stan Laurel, and I can't see Dick Van Dyke putting up with that. You know? He just seemed far too upstanding of a citizen for something like that. Can I tell you one that's not on the list, but I think you'll enjoy hearing this?
Yes.
You remember the movie Twister with Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt?
Yes.
They hated each other so much.
There
in
is
that
no
movie.
Way. They were so adorable together. I wanted them to get married in real life.
They couldn't stand each other so much that I'll give you two different instances to prove it. Number one, they built a ride at Universal Studios in Orlando, and they needed both of them to come back to film little bits for the ride. And they both did it under one condition. And that's that all their scenes be without the other person. So when you're on that ride, and it's not there anymore, they took it down a few years ago, but even though both of them are in the scenes in the ride, everything is shot as a one shot. You see him talking, then her talking, then him talking, then her talking. They wouldn't do it again. They were also offered an incredible sum of money to do a sequel. And again, both of them said, yeah, I'd love to do it as long as that one's not in it. So they never made a sequel to Twister, even though it made tons of money. They couldn't do a sequel because neither one of them would do it because they hated their partner.
They were so good together.
Weren't they? I thought so, too.
I guess that's a testament to how good of an actor each of them is because...
I know.
I'm not kidding. They made the cutest little couple. And what did I just see him in? Some show I watch or movie that
Bill Paxton?
Yeah.
He shows up in stuff all the time. He works all the time, just not with Helen Hunt. He refuses.
Yeah, yes.
Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep. The movie was Kramer versus Kramer. They played a divorced couple, couldn't stand each other. Meryl, why don't you stop carrying the flag for feminism and just act in the scene, Dustin Hoffman would say to Meryl Streep as she pressed for script changes during production of 1979's Kramer versus Kramer. Now, keep in mind, when they made Kramer versus Kramer, Dustin Hoffman was a pretty big star and Meryl Streep was kind of on the upswing. People didn't know that she was Meryl Streep yet. She had a couple of credits.
Right.
But she wasn't Meryl Streep.
And he seemed like a little bit of a diva.
Do you think so?
A little bit.
Dustin Hoffman? Later, he made a change of his own, shattering a wine glass so close to Meryl Streep that she ended up with glass in her hair. This according to Meryl Streep's biography, Kramer versus Kramer. Wow. How about that? Now, again, I know they played a divorced couple in the movie, but I'm thinking they probably got along. They probably respected each other to some degree.
I would have thought so. But yeah. You're right. She was just starting out at that point.
Yeah.
What about Mae West and W.C. Fields? Did they like each other?
I don't know about them. Why? Do you know something about them?
No, somebody was just texting that they didn't get along and you know.
Two giants at the time. I think they only made one movie together. I think My Little Chickadee was the only movie they ever made together.
That was it? Why does it seem like they were always together?
I think just the one.
608 says, little known fact, Bill and Wendy don't know they hate each other, but watch the video feed. Wendy rolls her eyes when Bill speaks, and Bill spits in Wendy's Diet Coke when she's not looking.
That's happened a few times.
But that doesn't mean we don't like
each other. No, that's just part of the show. That's part of the show. You know, in my favorite movie of all time, The Godfather, James Caan plays Sonny Corleone. And there's another actor whose name will not be familiar to you, Gianni Russo, and he plays Connie's husband. You know, their sister gets married to this guy that nobody in the family really likes. And there's a scene where James Caan goes after him because he has beat Connie Corleone. So Sonny goes after him. And that fight, even though it's a screen fight, was a little more realistic than it needed to be. It says when Sonny Corleone, James Caan, beats up his brother-in-law, Carlo Rizzi, in The Godfather, the on-screen violence actually did some real damage. James Caan improvised a bit with a trash can lid. I remember this. And when he hits him with the trash can lid, he reportedly broke a couple of Russo's ribs. Word had it that the two actors never liked each other.
I remember that fight, too.
It's a pretty... When you see the fight, you say to yourself, I know this is a staged fight for a movie, but wow... And it turns out it was a little more real than it was supposed to be.
Again, good acting.
Yeah. Great acting. All right. Thanks, everybody, for contributing and for calling in and texting in. We have to take a quick break, and then we'll find out what Ro and Anna have next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.